Blockbus.net Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 127. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Yo!
BJ Colangelo has assured us, with little blue hearts via text message, that she will be joining us as soon as she gets home. So we'll be anxiously awaiting her to call in to the podcast.
Anxiously.
Did I say that you're here, Brad? With me as always, Brad Henderson. Did I say that?
You didn't say with always, but you said I'm here.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a pretty kick-ass show today. I think we're going to be going through what's on our doorstep. We're going to be about the new release from Kino. It's a post-apocalyptic flick called Striker that I think we should have a lot of fun talking about. We'll be talking about Silver Bullet in our Stream Screams segment, and then we'll be talking about the movie Mr. Frost in our VHS Oh My God segment. So buckle up, everybody.
Oh, shit.
Follow us on Twitter, Scream_cast, tweet along as you listen to the show. It's a lot of fun when you guys do that. You can find us as well on Facebook, facebook.com/Screamcast2014. Of course, you can find all our social media links over at thescreamcast.com, as well as info on our sponsors and how to support the show if you want. With that said, though, let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
Dude, you should like edit that little part, and you could say that and just put that in through the episodes, like when something goes down.
Yeah. Okay, I'll save that as a little.
I'm like the Michael Buffer of horror podcasts. Oh shit! That's good. You need a TM that shit.
All right, I'll get on that. All right. Well, since as always, you watch like 5 billion movies during a week, and I only watch
30.
A handful, I am going to go ahead and go first.
You go ahead, Sean.
I watched a handful of movies. I continued through my post-nuke series, the Code Red Blu-rays that were released a while back. These have all been films of Hold on. I'm getting there. My brain's working faster than my freaking computer. These are all movies directed by Sergio H. Santiago, who, of course, directed the movie we'll be talking about today, Striker. The first movie.
Striker.
So far, I have. God damn it. Where the hell did my.
It's not a movie about Curtis Striker for Mortal Kombat.
No, it is not, unfortunately. The other movies I've watched so far, the other two I talked about last week, were The Sisterhood and Equalizer 2000. I followed those up with 1985's Wheels of Fire, which I think is my favorite of these movies so far. It was my favorite up till watching Striker. We'll talk about
how can you tell them apart?
The Sisterhood is about
women. It was a joke.
Equalizer 2000, big ass crazy gun. Wheels of Fire, great soundtrack. The soundtrack was by the gentleman who scored Sinister. I'm trying to find his name right now. The soundtrack was like surprisingly like really damn good. Here we go. Music by Christopher Young.
Christopher Young.
Yeah. Yep, so that was kind of what it set it apart. I mean, he scored Exorcism of Emily Rose, Drag Me to Hell, Sinister. What else has he done? I mean, he's not like, you know, anything crazy, you know, but I mean, he's done a lot of really good stuff. And so, yeah, that's what set this movie apart, I think, was the soundtrack. And I think, if I remember right, Gary Watkins as Trace is the main guy, was pretty badass. So, also, one of the actresses, gosh, which one was it? The blonde, it was Laura Banks. Anyway, there's one actress that she basically spends most of the movie topless. But not in like a fun way, in like a rapey sort of way. So it's a bit like of an odd thing because she gets kidnapped and
Sean.
It's all these movies, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like not as cool because normally you're like, oh yeah, I've got some titties here. But it's like, oh, this is kind of rapey and she had her shirt ripped off of her and she just has never got her shirt put back on because of that. So it's not as cool.
Wow.
But anyway.
Cool.
Wheels of Fire. A lot of fun. All these movies, all the plots have run together, but this one,
right?
Was a lot more like a Road Warrior type film because he drives like a badass car. And he's very, you know,
It's also about who controls the water, controls everything.
Right. Yeah, there's something like
what
that.
What the fuck does that remind you of?
He basically has to rescue his sister from the bad guys who are conquering towns and tinking the water. So, but this one was really fun. A lot of good action sequences, a lot of cool kind of post-apocalyptic cars, and some great.
It's got kind of a side story of like women empowerment too, because most of Stryker's like team is ladies.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So We're not talking Stryker yet, man. This is Wheels of Fire, but it all kind of runs together.
They're all the same movie, Sean.
No, I know. So Wheels of Fire.
It's all cars, guns, and dust.
Yeah. This one has a pretty badass main character. His sister is in it, and then she's pretty badass and everything. So Wheel of Fire, a lot of fun for this type of thing. I mean, of course, it all gets repetitive. Next up, I got my least favorite out of these that I've watched, and it stars David Carradine. Like, how could that happen?
Easy.
This is from 1991. This is late David Carradine. He is operating on total cruise control. He, of course, is like this samurai type, wandering samurai type figure in this post-apocalyptic.
Kung fu.
Very kung fu.
Continues.
And he meets up with this woman, and he kind of has to save the day from the bad guys that want the water. This one was the weakest of all of them.
You just gave the plot a Stryker.
No, it's all the same. I think this one has all the little people that are in Stryker. He uses the same little people.
Oh my god!
In all these,
there's so many little people in that,
and they all have.
Are you talking about Dune Warriors?
Yeah, Dune Warriors.
Oh, okay. You never actually mentioned the title of the movie.
Yeah,
by
I did,
the way.
Didn't I?
I don't think all you right. did.
Well, this is Dune Warriors from 1991, starring David Carradine.
I own Dune Warriors. I actually like Dune Warriors.
And for me, it was the weakest of the ones that I saw. David Carradine, like I said, on cruise control. But even David Carradine in I Don't Give a Fuck mode is still, like, fun to watch. So, he just brings a whole different level to these movies. You can just tell he's been acting forever, and he's just kind of like, whatever, fuck it, let's just do this, you know? And you can tell, like, when he's kind of improvising in a scene, like, he'll pat someone on the back, and he'll do something just, you know, not really necessary for the scene. But yeah, he's just kind of doing his thing and getting his paycheck.
Doing his thing.
But that was pretty fun to go through. Like, these are all Code Red Blu-rays, called it like the Post Nuke Connect Collection. So it's Dune Warriors, Wheels of Fire, Equalizer 2000, and The Sisterhood. So, all directed by Sergio Santiago. So, fun to kind of watch these, especially in preparation for Stryker. Next up, I watched a film directed by the director of Doctor Strange. This is a 2014 horror movie called, starring Eric Bana, called Deliver Us from Evil. Directed by Scott Derrickson.
Wow.
I'd been wanting to watch this for quite some time. I'd bought it for like $9 at Best Buy the week that it came out. And it was okay. I liked Scott Derrickson doing horror movies, especially like religious horror movies.
I've never seen it.
It's about a cop. It's very Seven, like the movie Seven, where it's raining and dark all the time. He's like a night beat cop who starts kind of stumbling across some weird crime scenes. One in particular is at a zoo, and a woman like throws her boy into a pit, like a lion pit. All right, BJ has just joined us.
I'm invading.
Oh my gosh, it's been so long.
I know. I don't even know what's happened. The last time I was on the show, we had a black president. So it's been a while, guys.
The last time you were on, things were looking pretty good. You know, when we had the impending.
I still had hope for America. I thought things were going to be awesome, and now everything's terrifying.
Well, we can be everyone's little light in the tunnel of darkness. We would all start talking with Russian accents, just who fit in.
Stop it.
Just who fit in with the world of America.
Stop it.
It's still racist, even if it's
stop
white
it.
People.
Would you like it some vodka?
Oh my god.
You like turned like Russian Italian. Like you just offended two different cultures with your bad impression.
It's not a screamcast apparently if I don't do a bad impersonation. Apologize. Apologies.
That's the truth.
BJ, I was just talking about a couple of flicks that I've watched in the What's on Your Doorstep segment. And
fantastic.
I will continue on and then we'll get to hear what you watched.
Oh, perfect.
All right, so as I was saying, 2014's Deliver Us From Evil is another flick that I watched starring Eric Bana. He gets caught like investigating a bunch of weird shit going on during he's like a night cop. And of course, this one crime scene he stumbles across, a woman has thrown her kid into the lion's pen at a zoo. And they're investigating what happened. She's going batshit crazy. Priest shows up, but although he's not wearing a collar, and somehow he knows he's a priest. Played by, I believe it's Edgar Ramirez. And, Joe McHale is in this as the goofy, kind of goofy-ish sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to play a serious character, but I like him, so it's fun to see him. Anyway. So the priest shows up, lady's crazy, and Eric Bana basically is trying to investigate all the weird shit going on, why she would do this, how it's connected to these other batshit crazy things that he's stumbled across, and of course, could be spiritual, and it was pretty good. Like I said, I think Scott Derrickson, I like his religious horror slant. All of his movies, his horror movies especially, have had kind of this slant with religious horror, which I really like. And I think he's a solid horror director. But I feel like I'm hoping he doesn't get too caught up in the whole Doctor Strange stuff and the Marvel things, because I think he shines kind of back in the horror arena, and I'd like to see more from him. But I liked it. I thought it was okay. I thought it was good. It didn't blow me away or anything, but, it was a good kind of original take on kind of a possession. You know, what could be just a standard possession flick. I like that it was crossed with this investigation, these cops, and everything. So that was Deliver Us From Evil. Although they're
cool.
The poster, it says Deliver Us From Evil, but they keep the D right next to evil, so it looks like Deliver Us From Devil.
That is true. I think that movie got kind of a bad rap, and I think it was in large part to the marketing, because that movie is less of like a spiritual horror movie, and I think it's more of a crime drama than anything.
And
everybody went in hoping that it was going to be, you know, Sinister 2.0 or whatever movie he did that came before it. I don't remember chronologically of his career, but I really enjoyed Deliver Us From Evil. I just think people went in expecting something else, and hated the film because it didn't meet the expectations they had made up in their mind.
Well, I had no idea what to expect, and I liked that it went into more of a police procedural. Like, I liked that about it. I thought it's what, you know, and it has its moments, you know, like exorcism type moments, but I kind of like the mystery of it. It was almost more of a mystery than anything.
I agree with that completely. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Yep. All right. Hold on, hold on 1 second. I got a cough.
Oh my god!
All right.
Oh my god!
All right. So next up, I finally, after owning this movie, I think for 3 years, I finally watched Stoker.
Wow! It took you that long.
Wait, slow clap.
Where you been?
Exactly. I don't know. Like, I bought this and I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. You know, I'd heard it's really, and it was almost because it was overhyped. I was like, well, everyone loves it. Everyone's tired, blah, blah, blah. And it almost like made me not really want to watch it. And then I started and I'm like, oh shit, this is going to be different from anything that I've seen in a while, because it's Chan Wook Park, directing, and like, just from the start of the film, like the way the camera moves, the way everything's framed, and then you get into the story and, you know, the acting, and I was blown away by this film. I was like enraptured by the whole thing. Totally invested in the story. This girl named India, her father dies. A creepy uncle kind of shows up who's kind of maybe wanting to bang at her mom, played by Nicole Kidman. You don't really know. And the whole thing is from India's perspective, like how, like what's going on, and as she tries to unravel, like, you know, who this guy Charlie is and his intentions and everything. And it kind of sounds like from, you know, the synopsis that I was just like, you know, could be kind of boring or kind of one note, but once things, you know, the way it's filmed and how you find out about each character is it's not just people talking to each other. Like, you find out, there's a scene where you find out that she's been receiving like the same pair of shoes basically her whole life for her birthday. And it's not done through any dialogue. It's done through.
I just say a birthday.
And it's not done through dialogue. It's done through like a montage of like seeing like all these different size shoes kind of appear on her bed in a half circle or whatever. Like, just stuff like that is just different, and I really dug
imagery.
Yeah, I dug the way that it was visual storytelling, and Nicole Kidman is great in it as this widower, and Matthew Good as Uncle Charlie is just fantastic. And then I think the girl playing India, her name is Mia Wasisowska. So Stoker, really damn good. I should not have sat on it for so long. End of story.
Well, I'm glad you fixed that.
Emily Wells.
Oh, the soundtrack's fantastic.
Yeah, Emily Wells is one of my favorites, and that soundtrack's amazing.
Everything's great about it. It's one of my favorite movies now. It's in my top 20 probably, for sure.
Whoa, whoa, nice. Whoa. You've only seen it
nice.
One time.
I can't wait to watch it again.
Can't make that statement.
Next up, I watched a movie called The East. It's a liberal thriller.
Oh my god.
You
just fucking put me to sleep already.
No, it's about
my eyes just got really big because I have no idea what that means.
The East.
I think I know what you're talking
about. The East. So this operative for like this, she's like an operative for like big corporations to kind of go in and try to investigate and stop these little like eco terror type groups. So there's this group called the East that's doing these, goes all across the U.S. and everything and tries to mess with big corporations. Like, they would, you know, kind of like what Greenpeace did when they did the whole resist banner behind the White House. Like, stuff like that. But they kind of go a little deeper. And one of the capers they want to do is basically poison pharmaceutical CEOs with their own medicine, antibiotic that's causing, like, problems with kids. So stuff like that. So Britt.
So
Marling,
to literally give them a taste of their own medicine.
Literally. So it's this is a heavy-handed kind of liberal thriller I would say.
Literally.
So if you're a conservative person, Republican, you might be like, oh my God, you know, you might maybe get a little upset at it. I don't know. It stars Brett Marling. It stars Ellen Page and Alexander Skarsgård.
Wow.
And Britt Marling is the operative. She has to go in and infiltrate this hippie group.
This is the director of Sound of My Voice.
Yes.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Now. So she goes in and maybe she gets in a little too deep.
Oh shit.
Oh man.
I always like getting a little deep. Yeah, I like getting deep now, Sean. Now you're in my territory.
She gets balls deep with Alexander Skarsgård, if you know what I'm saying.
Wow, you're totally not talking. You just might as well move on. You're not talking to anybody watching this. Like, you just bored me half to fucking death. We're supposed to be spending a minute on the movie, and you're spending 5 minutes
explaining
about a movie
me.
That no one wants to watch.
Keep it up to me. No, I think it's pretty good. I like, you know, I like all the actors in it. It gets a bit hippy-dippy halfway when they're in this little commune, and they all have to, like, play this game where they touch each other's face and hold each other and just sit and stare at each other's eyes and blah. But once it gets past that, it gets pretty good, pretty good thriller.
You're totally not talking to anybody into watching this.
It's okay. It's okay.
You had me with Ellen Page, and then you lost me with Balls Deep, Alexander Skarsgård.
Yes.
So that's the East. It's okay. Next up, I watched Force 5, and I've never seen Force 5, but Force 5 is like the best thing I've ever seen in my life. If you've never seen it, watch it. How's that for
a minute? The best thing you've ever seen in your life, 15 seconds. The East, 10 minutes.
Well,
got it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to spend the next
5 is
I'm
going to spend 1981.
I know
flick.
What Force 5 is.
Martial arts expert leads a team of fellow martial arts artists to rescue a senator's daughter from an island ruled by an evil leader of a fanatical religious cult. Fantastic. See it. Next up, I watched a documentary called The Killing of America. This is out on Severin right now, and I think this is probably like one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. On the subject of like murder and what it takes to be a murderer, and it's like an evaluation of basically this was filmed in 1981, so from between like 1977 and or even the late 60s through 81, it just catalogs a few high profile murders and assassinations. They talk about JFK, they talk about the attempted assassination on Ronald Reagan, they interview in depth a serial killer who went around and would just kill young women, and he was still in jail. He's super smart, had like 145 IQ. I forget the guy's name.
Ted Bundy.
No, well, Ted Bundy. They talk about Ted Bundy. They talk about all that stuff. It's super graphic, and it's incredible that it's never got a release in the U.S. because I think, like, as a subject matter, like, this is something that everyone should see. You know, and I wonder if this actually was a hit or widely seen in 1980s in 1981 and on, like what public policy could have been influenced by it, or at least people's perceptions, because I couldn't take my eyes off it. My jaw was on the ground the entire time. I thought it would be too graphic for me because real stuff, I always kind of get a bit squeamish. But the way they presented it, it wasn't exploitative. It was done in the sense of like kind of urgency and like education, and it's really, 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 really good. I would encourage anyone who's interested in real crime documentaries, or just want to educate yourself about like these subjects. It's very well done and very good, and it's almost like even more poignant today because all this shit's still going on. It's like all the stuff that they're talking about in this documentary, all the policy and like gun control and everything that they're talking about, like we're still trying to figure all that out today, like exactly. And you know, penitentiaries and prisons being full and all that stuff. So it was really well done. There's a Japanese cut as well. I didn't watch that, but apparently the only difference is they changed the beginning because it starts off pretty hardcore, and the Japanese audience, they wanted to kind of ease people into, because they with their own perceptions of what America is, kind of this great country, peaceful and everything, and then they kind of hit them over the head with kind of the reality. So it's out right now on Blu-ray by Severin, and it's really good. Next up, finally, I finally watched the movie Enemy, starring Jake Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal. Jesus.
He is, every time I see him in something, he's becoming more and more like a favorite actor of mine. This movie is a pretty crazy, what the fuck, especially the ending, but all the way through, it's pretty damn good. It's about a guy, just this mild-mannered, teacher or professor somehow stumbles across in a movie his someone who looks exactly like him, and he tries to track that guy down. They meet, weirdness ensues, and it's pretty damn good. End of story. Everyone's probably seen it by now, but I finally watched it, and I liked it. I didn't love it, but it's weird. It gets weird, and the ending is like even weirder. But I love the Gyllenhaal.
Apparently,
love him so much you couldn't read his own name.
Yeah, I always mispronounce his last name.
That's okay.
Like I always do. Every time I'm like, I'm gonna say it right this time, I'll botch it up. So anyway, that's it. That's my what's on your doorstep. BJ.
Sure. So I'll keep mine quick since I've been gone for so long. I don't know, you know, what all everyone's seen and talked about, but I did do some revisiting of some stuff. I hosted a double feature of, I'm going to test Brad, because if he can figure this out, I'll be really excited. It was a double feature of movies where the killer would kill somebody and then put them in water, and there's also a mentally handicapped red herring. Can you figure out what two movies?
No. So, water?
So, the killer would kill somebody and then put the victim in water, and there's a mentally handicapped red herring.
Nice school.
That's one of them. Can you figure out the other one?
Majoress?
Yes, you got it.
Holy shit.
This is why Brad and I are friends. But yes, I did host the double feature of that, and I got to show both of those films.
Well, Night School is easy. It's one of my favorite movies ever.
Right.
Majorettes, I haven't seen in a while, but yeah.
Again, that's why why we're friends, is because Night School is my favorite slasher of all time. So we did that double feature, and I got to show it to a bunch of people that had never seen it before, and they were just in shock at like how kind of insane both of those movies are, because The Majorettes, obviously, I was a baton twirler for 20 plus years. It's always going to be something I love, but that's a movie that starts off one way and then takes a hard left and goes into a completely different direction and then goes into another completely different direction. It's all over the place, but it's still fun. It's not a great movie, but I have a lot of nostalgia, love for it, so I'll always love it. Night School, again, you know, one of my favorites of all time. So I've talked about that movie plenty of times on here, so I won't bore you with that again. So watch that. We recently finally got our VCR to work with the new smart TV. So we checked out a little film called 9½ Ninjas. And wow, is that a movie? Have you seen 9½ Ninjas, Brad?
It sounds familiar. Is it the Filipino movie?
No, it is American, but it is like it's a parody movie that's not trying to be a parody movie.
I've seen that.
I'm lying. It's definitely trying to be a parody movie, but it's I need to just read the back of it, and then I'll just leave it at that, because it is insanity. Can an uptight martial artist remain sane and single when he takes on a sexy relationship-minded discipline? Or will her push to hook up be enough to unhinge this ninja? As a noble warrior, it's Joe Vogue's duty to fight off villains like the ones pursuing luscious Lisa Thorne. But ever since becoming her protector and mentor, he's had to fight her off as well. Lisa is bound and determined to be his live-in love, and although Joe is weary of getting tied down, he's getting turned on by the idea of becoming her ninja master. The only problem is if he doesn't turn his attention from his assistant to the hoods on their heels, they'll both be learning the meaning of a discipline, assassin style. Yeah, it is a sexy ninja comedy.
I know what you're talking about now, but I've never seen it. I know what you're talking about.
My God, if you have had approximately 72 beers and 3 bowls, you will love this movie because it. Okay, well, definitely one that I'm going to be showing at parties until the day I die because it's that kind of movie. It's just it's too unbelievable to try to explain it. You just have to watch it. So I've watched that. I did a rewatch of American Psycho yesterday. My wonderful boyfriend Zach took me to a Valentine's themed dinner that was American Psycho themed. So you had like an option was like this garlic martini or a Four Loko because it's a crazy red and hip to be square. All of the meals were like with like blood wine and like really fancy and you know, Dorsia style. And then we had everyone over to watch American Psycho, which is it's perfect. Like that movie, no matter how many times I've seen it, I still find new ways to love it. All of the iconic moments still hit, no matter how much time has passed. No matter how many times I've seen it, it's just a wonderful, wonderful film. So we did that one, and then I've recently been watching a lot of horror television. So I binge watched the entirety of the Santa Clarita Diet in one sitting. Oh, and nice. Liked it. I liked it way more than I thought I was going to.
I tried watching that with my wife, and as soon as she vomits in the house, my wife like almost threw up and made me turn it off.
See, that's like the grossest thing that happens. So get her past that. I think she'll really enjoy it. Especially, you know, realtor. I really, really liked it. It took about an episode or two for me to really get hooked on it. But the daughter character is phenomenal. I didn't think that I was going to like Timothy Olyphant as a comedic actor like this. But I think that his sense of comedic timing is really charming and interesting because it's very different. And then, of course, Drew Barrymore is Drew Barrymore. So I've really liked the show, you know, binged through all of that. And then I also binged all of The Exorcist TV show, which I also didn't think I was going to like, and I went in fully intending to hate it and didn't hate it at all. It is surprisingly strong, in my opinion. I will watch anything Gina Davis does because I think she's a perfect human. There's a lot of things that could be better. I mean, it's a television show and it's a first season, so they probably don't have as much money as they deserve. So there is some CGI issues at times. A lot of it is practical, but unfortunately the stuff that is CGI is painfully obvious. It's set in Chicago, which obviously I'm going to be a big fan of that. But it takes like this really interesting kind of like side story. And that's where I'm more invested. I mean, obviously it's The Exorcist. Old priest, young priest, girl is possessed. We know that story. We know where that goes. That's fine. But they take this weird, like, beeline that I'm hoping becomes the main focus of the series if it continues, where it's this idea about is evil attracted to a location, or are we just, like, so shitty as people that evil, like, comes to us because of who we are? And it focuses on, like, the crime in Chicago. And it's like, is Chicago a dangerous place to live because evil has always been there, or
it is because crime's at 50%.
It's murder rate really bad.
50%. 50% of the people of Chicago are dying by murder.
80% of us are all murdered. but it does take this really interesting parallel of like is there crime in Chicago because evil was bred there and it's always been there, a la Candyman? Or is evil coming to Chicago because it is so violent, so now evil is attracted to it? And I think that's a really interesting thing. I love that sort of play where it's not just like, oh, well, there's Catholics, therefore demons, where it's taking a broader approach to the concept of good and evil. And I think that's really interesting. So I'm hoping that they do renew the show, because I would love to see them dive further into that, considering the A story of old priest, young girl being possessed. That story has played itself through. Mm-hmm. So now the only way to go is to focus on kind of this abstract idea of evil. So I'm hoping that's what happens. And then, yeah, I've done, you know, other random rewatches, you know, Green Room, just things that make me happy, but I'm not going to talk about that.
Green Room makes you happy? Shit.
I mean,
it makes me happy too, but in the sickest way possible.
I just really, really love Macon Blair, and I just want to watch him do everything forever. So, I did have, like, I hate it when I watch a movie and then, like, I tweet about it and then it, like, sort of goes viral and then, like, people start asking me about it, and Green Room was one of them, because I said, like, if there's anything going on in the world right now, Green Room has already taught us how to deal with neo-Nazis. And then I, like, hashtagged it Spare Macon Blair. And then all these people were like, oh my God, Macon Blair's the best. He can make a Nazi be redeemable. And I'm like, it's because he's perfect. But now, like, every once in a while, I'll get, like, a random tweet from somebody that's like, yeah, Macon Blair's the best. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. He is. He really is. So then I've just been, like, on a Macon Blair kick for the last, like, 3 weeks. Just like, I'm going to watch Blue Ruin today. And then I'm going to watch Murder Party. So that's been me all since, right, I've been gone.
Brad, you still alive?
I get to see,
you're right.
Yeah, I get to see his new movie that he wrote and then Pat Healy's in.
Oh.
Yeah, that's going
to
be insane.
So bad. Oh, I know what I didn't get to talk about. Oh my God, I'm sorry for interrupting, because it was the thing I was excited to talk about, and then everyone in my life died and I haven't been on the show. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I have avoided listening to the show because it just makes me sad, and that's how I deal with conflict, is I just avoid it and pretend it's not happening.
That's probably best. No, we just said you can tell everyone what's been going on. That's not our place.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I'll tell you guys. So I've been gone because every week in 2017 so far, I've had someone die, like a family member or a friend or a friend's child. It's just been a lot of death and doom and gloom, and the last thing I wanted to do is be like, hey, I watched this movie that's about death and doom and gloom. So I've been, you know, a sane person and totally stable lately. But my favorite movie of last year, like my favorite find, because I don't want to do my top five, but my favorite find was Teenage Cocktail. And I'm glad you said Pat Healy, because that popped it into my brain. If you want to see a movie that personifies everything that I love about cinema, everything that I love about acting, everything that I love about writing, everything I love about scoring a movie, Teenage Cocktail. Like, if you took my brain and put it in a blender and then spilled it on a film reel, Teenage Cocktail is what would have come out of it.
Wow.
I fucking loved this movie so much. And I knew that I was going to, like, for the last, like, year and a half, I've just been, like, tweeting at Travis Stevens, like, who do I have to give a reach around to see Teenage Cocktail? Like, I just want to see this movie so bad, just based off of the poster, the image, like, the stills they're releasing. I just knew, this is a movie that's going to, like, just resonate with me on so many levels. And it did, because it is so weirdly close to things that have happened in my life. Like, I've talked about the fact that I, like, used to do camgirling. Like, that's not a secret. So that's a major part of this movie, and like watching just kind of that like blatant ignorance you have when you're young and you're just trying to get money and you're just trying to get out of your hometown and do something with your life. And like, this is the quickest, cheapest, fastest way to get that accomplished. And like, these poor girls like don't realize like how fucking dangerous that world is. And then you don't realize like how many crazy people are out there. And like, Pat Healy, like, he is just a God among men, and we need to give him every award and every job and everything, because he's so talented. Like, if Pat Healy and Macon Blair did like a two-man movie together that it was like just them in a room. Like, oh my God, that's just my dream. But yeah, Teenage Cocktail, favorite movie of last year, like easily in my top 20 of all time. I fucking loved it.
And both of you are throwing out movies in your top 20 like it's nothing.
And that's the thing. I've watched the movie four times in the last year, and it's like, I just think that it
all
is.
All right, I'll give it to you.
Oh my God. And like, I know that it's a movie that like not everyone's going to get. Like, some people are going to watch this and go, why the fuck are you hyping this movie up? Like, that was boring. That was stupid. I don't like it. And you know what? That's fine. You're entitled to that. I'm also entitled to be like so effortlessly in love with this movie. And like, all I want is to own it, but I know Netflix has it, so I don't know if I'm ever going to get to own it, which sucks. And I want like a poster of it, and I want to like tattoo it on my face. Like, oh God, I love this movie.
I love it. Tattoo on my face.
We'll have to hit up Travis Stevens and ask when that blue.
Oh God.
Travis, if you're listening, hit us up. When's the blue coming? Come on.
I want it forever.
Can you at least get one made for BJ, please?
I just get one. Just burn me a mixtape that's just Teenage Cocktail.
Yeah. All right.
So yeah.
All right.
That's it.
Nice. Yeah, I really want to see it too. Yeah, it's on Netflix, and I've been meaning to watch it, so I'll get around to it at some point.
It's really good.
Yeah. I love that movie. I'm like hyperventilating how much I love that movie. Oh, it's perfect. It's so perfect. Anyway, what'd you watch, Brad?
What you got?
All right. I dropped my ball. God damn it. All right. Are we recording?
Yeah.
All right. So
are we recording?
I can actually shut up. I can talk about this movie now. We actually received this as a submission for the Florida Film Festival. I am programming the Florida Film Festival. I'm just going to talk about this because this is not going to get programmed because it is streaming on Shudder. So filmmakers, do not submit your film if it's streaming because there's no point. It's called Therapy. It's a found footage movie. It's been streaming on Shudder for a while, apparently. It's a Shudder exclusive. So I checked this out, and yeah, it's okay, except here's my main beef with the movie, is that the killer, it looks like they took a Michael Myers mask and cut out just like the face part, you know, left the hair and the backing and just wore the face because the guy wears a fucking jumpsuit. And the whole time, every time he shows up, I'm like, oh shit, it's fucking Michael, you know, but it's not. And it does try to do a new spin with storylines and something crazy, but it just ends up being really generic and just really slow. You know, one of the girls that's running around is like 15, and she has like this fucking huge GoPro camera on her forehead. Bitch, if I am running, like, there's got to be at least some kind of like thought process of just saying, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not going to wear this on my fucking forehead. Like, and the worst part,
like 3 minutes in.
Well, the thing is that it takes place at night. And this is the one thing that bugged me the most is it takes place at night. They're actually at this old insane asylum that is now shut down. And this killer stalking halls. He basically traps them inside on, you know, he boards up the first floor so they actually can't get out. You know, they'd have to jump down from the windows. He's got all the stairs boarded up, so they're trapped, which I enjoyed. But everybody has this huge fucking light on their camera, and it's pitch dark. And they're walking around with their cameras. And then, like, they're like, oh, he's coming. Turn your light off. So they turn the light off. And then, like, they put it on night vision, and he comes in the room. And then as soon as he leaves, they turn the light back on. And I'm like, all right, this is just too fucking stupid. Like, I can believe certain things. I can believe you holding a camera for fucking 2 hours and running around. Sure. I can let that go. But I can't let that fucking shit go. Just, like, just stupidity as far as like a filmmaking process. Like, obviously your killer's gonna see the fucking light, you dim shit, you know? Fucking, anyways, the movie pissed me off because just, like, if it had the story and had, like, the characters and all that shit just went normal, that would be fine. But there's too many just, like, fuck-ups as having lights on right in front of the killer. Then, like, it's like fucking a throwing a blanket over a cage on a fucking bird or something. Like, the killer's like, oh, there's no more light. I can't go in that room because they're obviously not there. And he fucking turns around. Like, he's walking up to them, and they turn off the light, and then he turns around like it's not a big deal. I just don't understand. Anyways, I didn't like it. Shudder exclusive. So I got around to watching to the theater. Oh, boy. Went to go see Rings before it's pulled out of theaters because it did terrible. And the reason why it did terrible is because it's pretty fucking bad.
I was hoping you were going to say the reason it did so terrible is because it's so terrible.
So it really is. It was kind of upsetting because I'm a huge fan of the series, like, you know, the Japanese TV show that they had, you know, fucking like 16 different Japanese Ring films made for TV to the theatrical stuff. You know, they have this Sadako series, and they have Sadako versus Keiko on Shudder exclusive, which I recommend. That movie's a lot of fun. But I was really hoping for something big, even because I remember like this shit was supposed to be released like last year in October and then got pushed back to like fucking, you know, December, and then got pushed back again until February. And it's like, man, what a fucking nightmare. When movies do that, they're usually not good because that means the producer's probably not happy and wants you to edit the shit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
This movie starts out like the worst made for TV horror movie in 1998.
Oof.
I am not exaggerating. Sometimes I exaggerate when telling a plot like Therapy or something like that. I'm going to give you exactly the first 3 minutes of Rings. This guy's leg is shaking on a plane. And the girl next to him says, hey, if you talk, conversations make this easier. He turns around and goes, oh yeah, why watch this tape? And in 7 days, I'm going to die. Today's the seventh day. And I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Like, that's the first line that you say. So the guy like gets really nervous and gets up. And then her friend sits down and goes, oh, who's the hot guy? She's like, a hot guy? Talk about a psycho. So he watched this tape. And then she grabs her arm and says, oh my God, I saw that tape. And I'm like, is this for fucking real? Like, are we watching... are the characters in Rings watching a movie about the ring or something? Because this is like info dump. Like, if all the idiots had not seen Rings going in and need an info dump real quick, that's literally.
And is it all VHS or is it online? I feel like they have everyone's missed the point of like this thing ended up on YouTube and mass people are dying. Like, they missed the point.
They ripped off in Sadako. That's kind of the. Route that it goes in. Gotcha. Japanese, like 2012, it goes into the internet and stuff. But I shit you not, that scene on the plane that you see all the ring things pop up, that actually happens in the first 3 minutes, so no spoilers. The next sequence, like right after that, is Jimmy Galecki. What is his name? Galecki? I like that kid, but he's terrible in this. He's standing there looking at a VCR with this girl, and she goes, oh, talk about a dead format. He's like, yeah, dead format. Apparently, the guy that owned this VCR died in a plane 2 years ago. And it's like, oh my fucking God, what are you – like, it was like the worst writing.
Why would you have that information about somebody who owned your fucking VCR? Like, maybe your apartment, but not your VCR.
No, it's insane. It's insane. Like, all that happens, I am not kidding, in the first 5 minutes of the film, all that shit goes on. And I'm sitting there, like, I'm getting a fucking migraine because I can't believe this is actually happening.
Wow.
But anyways, it's really fucking bad. It's not good. The time that you do see Samara, I mean, she's great in the 1 minute she's in it. But like, it's not even fucking a Ring movie because you don't even ever see her. Like, it's ridiculous. It's in the times that you do see her, it's not a fucking actress. It's fucking computer shit. It's like, how hard is it to fucking put a white dress on a girl with a fucking black wig? Like, give me a break. Spray her down with a hose. That's Samara. It's not that hard. But, oh my
god. Spray it down with a hose.
I mean, that's how easy it is. Like, the filmmakers, obviously the filmmakers listening to this podcast are like, fuck, we paid like $30,000 for that fucking CGI. We just watered her down with a hose. It would have been fine.
I mean, to be fair, those stage parents are awful. And getting a kid, ugh, maybe. This is why I don't produce movies.
So, all right. So moving on to better shit. Wild Eye. I'm a huge fan of Wild Eye. They put out this Christmas horror film called Secret Santa. It was funny because about 2 weeks before this actually came out, Ryan Turek tweeted, "Why isn't there a horror film called Secret Santa?" And like 2 days after that, I saw this and I was like, holy shit, there's a movie called Secret Santa.
Dude, maybe they Secret changed Santa. It like since that tweet. Like maybe it was going to be called something else.
Dude, Secret Santa's fucking fun. I'm going to just say, I like Wild Eye. I like their shit. This is very like homage-y and fucking, you know, throwback. It's got, you know, a synth score. Basically, all these people are at a party. They each get a package with a weird weapon of sorts, and that's the weapon that they die from. And it's just silly. It's really gory. It's very funny at times. It has that 80s style charm of very much like any of you ever see Splatter University? No? Okay, no. Cool. Well, it has kind of that comedic grout that Splatter University has. But very good. Next up is I've always wanted to see this movie. I can't say why I want to see this movie because it gives away what the movie is. So hopefully everybody has seen it. It's a made-for-TV movie. It came out in the 70s. It's called Bad Ronald. Bad Ronald is about this kind of misfit kid who commits murder on a young girl. Kind of an accident. But his mom knows that he's going to be put away, so she protects him. He is good with tools and carpentry and shit like that. So they build a room for him in their house for him to stay. So that way he doesn't have to go to jail. He doesn't have to run away. He's going to stay in there for a few months until everything kind of dies down, and then they're going to move away together. So they build this room. He stays in it. Something happens, of course, and he's stuck in that room. It's very creepy. It's the thing about might be a little before its time. Like if this thing came out in the 80s, I think it would have hit really hard, but it's still really, really fucking good. Next up was Full Moon's Head of the Family. This is a rewatch for me. I don't know why I rewatched it. I'm not a fan of a lot of Full Moon movies. It's a big head that tells people what to do. That's it. I think if people like Full Moon, I think they remember these movies and they enjoy them. There is kind of, it almost feels, I want to see if BJ agrees with me. A lot of these Charles Band production movies feel like they're made like by carnies. Like there's this circus aspect to it. It feels like everything. I don't know if it's the music that they have in the movie, but it reminds me of like watching a movie like at a circus. I don't know what if that makes any sense to anybody, but if that makes any sense to anybody, it is like, oh yeah, I feel like I'm at a circus watching a Full Moon movie, but it just feels like very cartoonish and 90s and like that, the organ that plays at fucking circuses, you know, that fucking da 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 da, like that. That's what it feels like while watching the movie. That's the fucking soundtrack to every Charles Band movie.
I think that like the Charles Band movies, to me, always felt like they had the spirit of Troma without being like quite so white trash. Like, yeah, I don't know how else to describe that.
I guess
like,
it's more or less a fantasy aspect.
Yeah, it's like it's super wackadoo, and like they're all of the stories have like these really weird ideas, but they still somehow sort of fit. Like when you were just talking about like Alma, like is it Head of the Family? All the Family?
Head
is it called?
Head of the Family.
Thank you, Head of the Family. Because we have that one, and that's one that like we got based off of like box cover art. Like I think to me, like Full Moon always felt like we have this great image or this great concept or this great title, let's make a movie around it. Like that's what I think it is like without that weird image of like the fucking head guy, like why, like what else are you gonna do with that? Like that's a character design that you came up with because it's weird and then you made a movie around it.
And there's a lot of softcore porn in it too, like it's very bizarre because the two of the main actresses in the movie are porn stars.
I think that's like I think that that's like pretty par for the course with a lot of his movies, though.
Yeah, because like, he likes Frost to hire that.
Fucks, yeah, like Jack Frost is a snowman that like fucks you in a shower. Like, lest we forget,
non-consensually as well.
This is true. He's a rapey snowman.
But there's like fucking like 6 scenes in Head of the Family, 6 sex scenes. It's I'm not complaining because the girl that's in, she's a beautiful girl, but it's just, I don't know. It is a very too cartoonish, circusy, fantasy level for me that I don't like. Very much like Meridian, that he also did. Next up is another Wild Eye, title. I really like this. I'm not sure why this didn't play at Fest in big time. This is like, Wild Eye really focuses on like really lower budget, you know, kind of crazy, not your normal shit. You know, they get this other side of cinema, a really wild B wave of cinema. They have this documentary, The Search of Wing Wing. Wing Wing was an actor, from the Philippines for, played in a lot of spy movies and shit like that. You know, he's like not even 3 feet tall. He plays this James Bond type character. He played, I think it's like Agent 00. He plays in a few movies. Well, they made this documentary, and I didn't know this about him. Like, no one knew his fucking real name. No one knew where he died, how he died, when he died, where he was born, who his parents were. Did he have any family? Like, Wing Wing just kind of came out there, and a lot of people, like, that wasn't working in the Philippines just thought they were exploiting this, you know, little guy. So these documentarians jump out and try to find out what happened to this guy and, you know, where he went and what happened and just kind of his life story. So they, like, go to the Philippines – and they search for Wing Wing. Basically, his name, his family, all the filmmakers he worked with on his life. It's really fucking good. And it and who he was. But not all the questions are answered because there's not a lot of details about the guy. He just kind of appeared out of nowhere with these producers that produced pretty much all his films. And there you go. Very good documentary though. Next, Savage Beasts from Severin. I grew up with Savage Beasts. A bunch of drugs get into the local water supply and turn basically all these animals into murderous animals, or I should say savage beasts. But great, great little film. There's a part in the film where there is some underage nudity.
Is it Wild Beasts?
Savage Beasts. Well, I know it as Savage Beasts. Wild Beasts? Is that like the title that Severin went with?
I think so. I was trying to look for it.
Oh.
Sorry. Go continue.
See, No, it. What do they call it? Because I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, they're calling it Wild Beasts.
Okay, I really just remember it being Savage Beasts from VHS tapes.
Yeah.
But yeah, what Wild Beasts? They turn into Wild Beasts, and it's they go on a murder rampage, like I said. But there's this one part in the film where there's this underage nudity, and it just bothers me every fucking time. Like, it's completely unnecessary. It's super weird. But once you kind of get past that, it becomes really fun. I know that this film was kind of frowned upon because of, you know, some animal cruelty. You know, it's not heavy, but, you know, like little things like rats and stuff like that. Plus, it's a bunch of Italians making an exploitation flick.
Yeah, well, that's why I think so, where that nudity comes in. Like, is they're just they're apparently from what I haven't seen it yet. It's getting very close on my agenda to watch. But apparently, from what I read, was it's non-sexual and they're just changing. And it's just I wonder if it's just an Italian thing.
Yeah. I've watched probably more Italian movies than I have American
European
films.
Thing. I don't know.
And it's just the thing is, it's like, you know, it's just like a little, it's like a 12-year-old. So it's pretty weird. But once you kind of get past that, it gets pretty hardcore with, you know, with the animals attacking. There's some really, I mean, they did a great job making it look like these animals really attack. There is a cheetah, kind of chase. Where this woman is in a vehicle and this cheetah's chasing her down, and like these other guys are chasing after the cheetah that's chasing her, but it's really really good. A lot of good camera work, a lot of great editing, even for these kind of like exploitive or exploitation Italian flicks. Next up was Arrow's release of The Initiation. I love this movie. I know that this is kind of one. I think you would really like this, Sean, because
It's on my to watch pile.
You're not super gung ho about slasher films.
It depends on
this
the slasher.
I know. You're not very big on just like people getting killed and someone in a mask. Yeah, you want a little bit more substance to your film. And this does. I mean, we watch a film where we build around sorority girls. That's not a TNA movie, which I'm completely fine if you want to make a TNA movie. But this is not a TNA flick. It's you know, there is some, you know, sexy time and stuff like that. But it's very similar to Hide and Go Shriek, if anybody's familiar with that. It's basically people break in to someone's dad or something owns a furniture store. Or a chopping mall, for instance, is that same thing where they break into somewhere to spend the night and party. And, you know, hey, it's a killer robot or something's on the loose. And that's kind of what The Initiation is. It's a school or a sorority that they challenge Daphne Zangia, I think is how you pronounce it. You know, say anything, girl. Or wait, no, that is Ione Sky. Daphne Zangia was in that TV show. Wasn't she? Is that the Growing Pains girl?
I don't know.
She's super popular. She's super popular. Well, anyways, this is like one of her first films. So basically they get these new co-eds to go in and kind of seduce the security guard and steal his uniform and his underwear. And some shit goes down. But there's a lot more to the film than that. It's really like it's twisty. It's fun. You know, it takes place actually, you know, this is always a fun thing. And I thought about writing something about this. Please don't steal it if you're listening. But all the films that take place at I just drew a blank. It's a very popular mall in California, Sherman Oaks Mall. This movie takes place at Sherman Oaks Mall. It's like, you know, Terminator 2 was filmed in there during all those mall scenes. Chopping Mall, I believe, is filmed in Sherman Oaks.
By the way, Daphne Zuniga? Zuniga?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was what in TV family, show was family Ties.
Family
she's,
Ties,
yeah,
okay, thank
you. Sister, yeah, yeah.
This is going to drive me crazy. You know, Commando was filmed at Sherman Oaks during that sequence. There's a lot of big films filmed at Sherman Oaks Mall. Is it Sherman? Yeah, I think it's Sherman Oaks. I think so. It was super cool because, like, it's supposed to be like some kind of high tech facility type thing, but it's actually a fucking mall, and you can tell because there's like stores in the background. But anyways, like, it's a lot of fun. Next up was another Wild Eye film that I wasn't 100% on. I always forget how to say her last name. Debbie Rochin, I think. But, I mean, she's been in film forever. I don't know if this is her directorial debut. I mean, Tiffany Shepis is in it. I thought I was going to watch something pretty cool. Man, this movie is dry as fuck. Mm. And it was I saw it on a lot of lists last year. So I was kind of pumped to see it. And it was also on those, like, I fucking hate these lists, but there was a couple last year that I was like, oh shit, I actually haven't heard of this. 11 films you've never even heard of. It's like, wow, I've seen all 11 like 2 years ago. Thanks. But this was on like two lists. So I was like, oh shit, I have that. Man, I tell you, this is really dry. It's kind of body positive, body shaming horror film, with kind of a older person that kills. But
what's it called?
Yeah, it's called. Oh, sorry, I'm so sorry. It's called Model Hunger.
Model Hunger.
And I wanted really more out of it because Debbie's been in the business for fucking like 30 years, man. I would just expect something more. But maybe she just doesn't have it. Maybe she's just better on, in front of the camera. But hey, bravo for making a movie. Next up, dude, Sean, this is your shit.
Oh shit.
Listen, I've actually forgot to text you about this movie. This movie came out in 2014, like festival wise. It just now got released on Blu-ray, but it's called An Order of Disappearance. And Stellan Skarsgård is in it. He's a normal Joe Schmo guy that sells snowplow equipment.
Skarsgård. I love his life.
And his son is murdered. He's just a normal Joe Schmo guy. So this is kind of like a revenge movie where he just fucking takes on the mafia himself. Mm. It's so fucking good, dude. And it's so, like, these films, like, stuff that he's in, like, there was also a film a couple years ago, I think by the same director, called A Somewhat Gentle Man. And I don't know if that ever actually got released in America. But there's a sense of brutality, but really funny, dark comedy in these movies. Like, when you're like, oh my God, this is really fucking funny, but I'm not, like, it's not something you're supposed to laugh at, but it's so dark and disturbing that you can't help but snicker. But this film is brutal. It's, like I said, it's funny. It's got a really cool story. It's got a nice little mythology behind it. Because it's about hitmen, it's about drugs, it's about family, it's about revenge. It's really, really, really good. And this plays at Fantastic Fest, and I was so mad that I missed it because it would have been a lot of fun with that crowd, especially something like this. So it finally released on Blu-ray like 3 years later, but it's really, really good, and you would love it. I watched Roxanne finally. You ever see Roxanne with Steve Martin?
Oh yeah.
Hey, this is released on Blu-ray over in the UK. It's region locked, but anybody with a region free player, you're safe. Yeah, this was released on Blu-ray over there. So I picked it up because I was like, I've actually never seen Roxanne, and I'm a big Steve Martin fan. Love his books, love his movies. This is kind of funny. It's basically about, Daryl Hannah. She loves the looks of one guy, but loves the words that he's saying, but Steve Martin is actually the one saying them. So it's basically this guy is helping out, his buddy here, but Steve Martin has this long nose, like a gigantic nose that he's proud of, But sometimes he wants to, like, just chop it off and be like, he's like, I want to be normal with a really smooth nose. I don't want this big, beautiful schnoz. Like, he loves his nose. But if anybody says anything about it, he, like, attacks them. It's kind of a weird setup, but it's really, like, slapsticky and, you know.
And they don't even make it look like a normal big nose. It's, like, cartoonishly big.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a Pinocchio type thing.
No, I saw it when it first came out. Yeah,
yeah, I was just never, like, I don't know why I missed it, but I mean I did. But yeah, it's right up my alley. It's very 80s, very very silly. It's Steve Martin. I mean, there you go. I think that should explain the movie enough. I mean, yeah. It's Steve Martin being Steve Martin.
He's the best, funny but still like sentimental and sweet comedy. You know, like his movies. You know,
yeah, good family like stuff. That.
Yeah.
You know, because I grew up watching a lot of his movies, and I know his comedy's not for everybody, but I think it's for me. You know, I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan of, I know people are hardcore fans of, like, The Jerk and stuff. I enjoy those movies. I was always more of a Chevy Chase guy. And then Arrow's releases Psychomania. Psychomania has been released on every fucking DVD label known to man. It's had so many shitty releases. I was under the impression it's public domain, and it still could be. But it was one of those films that I thought would never, ever get released. Because a lot of companies say this is the reason why Night of the Living Dead has never been released and restored is because the film's been released so many times. Who the fuck is going to buy it? You know, it's one of those things. But they found the fucking elements of this film. They did a 2K scan on it. And this film is beat to fucking shit. I mean, the DVD releases of this film was so terrible, so dark. I've owned it on VHS about twice, three times maybe. Different copies, different labels of DVD, those big packs from Mill Creek. Code Red released it, known as the. This movie's also very well known as the Death Wheelers. So if you have a Death Wheelers DVD or one of those Mill Creek sets and it says Death Wheelers, that's Psychomania. So I was like, kind of afraid that this movie, because I've always loved this film. It's a bunch of bikers. It's really campy. It's really bizarre. It's really silly. But a bunch of these bikers, their main dude, head of the biker gang, Tom, decides that if they kill themselves, they can live forever in this kind of like spiritual world. And all they do is they're a biker gang and they wreak havoc everywhere in town. It's really goofy. There's a lot of weird moments, like, you know, Tom is like talking to his girlfriend and he's like, oh, what's that? And he like has this giant frog he picks up, like a ginormous frog. And just, he's talking to her and then he just puts it like in his jacket pocket and then like starts talking to her again. And the frog's just sitting there. And it's like one of those, it's so, like, it reminds me of like those Judd Apatow, Seth Rogen, Steve Carell things. Like there's a moment where he's like in the kitchen talking to his like butler helper guy, because his family's really rich, and he's just standing there and out of nowhere, like he's having this serious conversation and out of nowhere he just walks into the kitchen and sitting by the counter having a conversation, and all of a sudden he picks up the biggest sub sandwich I have ever seen in my life and then bites into it, and the sandwich is like bigger than his face. But he never made a sandwich. There's no sandwich anywhere. It just comes out of nowhere. And you just can't help but laugh because it's super fucking ridiculous. He's like talking with his mouth full. It's just a lot of things like that. It's very silly 70s. But it's got one of the best soundtracks in the world. It's got great cinematography. It's got some cool stunts. It's not for everybody. I can already tell you that. But it's something that it was one of those exploitation films I kind of grew up on, and it just, super weird. That's pretty much it. I watched Expendables 3, which was the worst movie I've ever seen.
Those don't hold up on a rewatch.
Dude, how awful can those get, man? I don't
understand.
Like, I enjoy the first one for what it, Sean's quote for what it is.
Yeah.
The second one, I was like, man, this is really, really silly. And the third one, like, I felt like it was a cartoon most of the time. How much fucking, like, crappy fucking CGI can we have in a movie?
Yeah. Like,
I mean,
if they would have just stuck to the basics and practical effects, like an 80s flick, you know what I mean?
It's not hard.
It's just, I don't understand. Like, they overthought it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad because I feel like these movies should be, like, a big thing. You know, I feel like these should be, like, fucking Star Wars type shit. Like, everybody's fucking excited about the new Expendables movie. Because the cast in this thing is great. Yeah. Stallone always has a great little script that's really goofy and campy and a lot of fun. And he does.
He's got the actors. Action fair.
Right, but they do it in such a way that it moves so quick. There's so much nonsense. You know, I just wish they took their time, I guess. I don't know. It's very disappointing. Yeah. But it's complete garbage. Like, I mean, I gave it a 2 star out of 5 just because Stallone made me laugh a couple times. Yeah. But, man, it's so silly how they try to incorporate, like, a new group really quick, and then that fails, and then they have, like, everybody come back, and it's like, ugh. Whatever.
Well, if you guys are wondering where BG went, we had some Skype issues. So we're working on bringing her back.
You see John Wick 2 yet?
No.
Oh, dude. You need to see John Wick 2. I actually saw John Wick 2. I wouldn't say it's the first one. It's very close, though. 4.5 stars. And being when we were talking about special effects... So John Wick's not a $75 million movie. Actually, I don't know the budget. I could be wrong. But I've never seen – and these movies are directed by a stunt guy, by the way. They're not directed by some well-known director, action director. John Wick, the first film and the second film, was directed by a fucking stunt guy.
Damn.
When I was in the theater for John Wick at Fantastic Fest, I believe it was the world premiere, I was like, I like Keanu. I'll watch it, but maybe at a later time. You know, I wasn't really into watching at the festival. And everybody's – I tell people, you're crazy. I was like, yeah, but you know what John Wick is now. I didn't. No one did. So I'm sitting in the fucking theater, and this guy comes up. And he's like, I don't even know if this is any good. I'm a stunt guy. I just wanted to make a silly action movie. And I'm like, oh, my God. This is going to be one of these direct-to-video fucking action movies. You know, that fucking one of those burnout actors like Gary Daniels is in. And then John Wick just blew me away. And it does have a silly plot, but it's so charming and so fun. And just, like, it knows what it is.
He was a stunt double for Keanu Reeves in Point Break.
He's been a stunt double for Keanu Reeves for years.
Yeah.
That's the reason why they made the movie together. Yeah.
Matrix.
Yeah. And so, like, he even says, I don't even know if this is any good. And he's like, I don't even know how to do a Q&A. I don't even know what I did. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to be garbage. But, I mean, obviously, I was fucking dead wrong. And so John Wick 2, I was, you know, really worried because I was like, are they going to fucking, you know, think that they're too good? Like, they're just going to be like, oh, everybody loved the first one. And they're obviously going to love the second one. John Wick 2 is great. It has – I would say it has better stunts than the first film. It has somewhat better shootouts. It knows – it really takes on the personality this time. They have a lot of fun with the film because I think – I don't know if they were worried about kind of the silly plot that was in the first film and kind of just the things that were said. But people loved it. You know, it's like all the, like, the little lines and everything like that. People were, you know, snickering. And it's still a really great movie. It's really fun. They really had a blast with this one because they were like, oh, yeah, John Wick, they killed his dog and they have his car. You know, So he's just still pissed off about everything. But I tell you what, man, I've never seen a film with stunts as great as this. The opening sequence of this film, the first 15 minutes, there is some car shit. A car chase, cars plowing into one another. There's people fighting in a circle, and cars are slamming into one another while these people are fighting. And there's a stunt where Keanu rolls out of this car as the car is hitting it, and it's flawless. And I'm like, wait, did they actually do this? Obviously they didn't. But I'm like, I'm looking at it, and I was like, that looked amazing. And then they have a CGI house burning down. But anyways, you know, it's either here or there. But I don't care about that type of shit. Because, I mean, they do CGI headshots and shit like that, which I understand because it's so quick. You can't, like, that would be really crazy to try to pull, you know, squibs off on people's heads during these long, long shots of him shooting everybody. So I can forgive that type of shit. But man, it's so much fun. He has such a blast with it. Keanu's so, so great. They open this movie up to so many sequels. Like, this thing is going, I really hope this thing just goes to chapter 7 of John Wick and the Fate and the Furious or something like that. But yeah, I think this is going to be kind of a Fast and the Furious type thing where we're just going to love everybody that's involved in these movies and the characters, that we're just going to have a blast with everything. So I'm really excited to see the future of John Wick. And I really hope this director, he keeps it up because I don't think they need anybody else.
Yeah.
I think they need that where it started, you know, a buddy of Keanu Reeves, because obviously Keanu has a lot of input because these guys have been working together for, you know, 30 years.
Yeah. And Keanu's directed movies too. So, you know, that he, you know, that this director just wasn't just jumping in totally blind, you know, because Keanu.
Right. This is very well put together and set up, and they're having a blast with it. And I just hope it doesn't go bigger than it's supposed to.
Awesome.
But man, goddamn, dude, the gunfights in this movie. Ugh. And Common, dude, some of the stuff between him and Common are just so fucking good. And this movie has so many fucking funny moments. Oh my God. But yeah, go see it. It's crazy good. Awesome.
All right, well, let's jump into the news with Josh Obershaw, and we will come back, hopefully have BG back here, and we will talk Stryker, and we'll have our Stream Screams and our VHS Oh My God. So stick around. Well, Josh Obershaw joins us for some Blu-ray news. What's up, man?
What's up, Sean? How are you this week?
I'm good. Welcome back.
It's good to be back.
Trying to stay not sick, but I'm good.
That's good to hear. Well, I hope you've gotten comfortable because we have got a ton of news to get through, and we're gonna get through these really, really quick. So why don't we just get started? We're gonna start off with some new franchise news. Now, I had planned on talking about this, but Mike D kind of from the Splathouse kind of ruined that. But Paramount canceled the new Friday the 13th movie. Boo. Moving right along, we've also got news on The Strangers 2. Looks like that is finally going before the cameras. Brian Bertino, who directed the original film, is going to be co-writing this time, and he's giving the director duties to a guy named Johannes Roberts, who directed a movie called The Other Side of the Door, and shooting is set to begin this spring. And in this... So it's been 9 years since this movie came out. I think a lot of people are waiting for this one. As far as like any box office is concerned, I mean, there's, you know, a lot of these delayed sequels haven't been doing too hot lately. So I don't know. I'm a little worried about that. But at the same time, I'm glad to see this movie get a sequel because it kind of deserves it.
Yeah, cool.
And in this week's You Didn't See That Coming? David Gordon Green and Danny McBride are writing the next Halloween movie for Blumhouse. The guys behind Pineapple Express are doing Halloween. That is just totally out of left field, but I'm really excited for it because obviously John Carpenter approves of it, therefore I approve of it.
It's so out in left field it could possibly work. And then if you've seen Vice Principals and the way that ended, it's like you kind of, you know, I think they can pull something off here that's pretty original.
Well, I haven't seen Vice Principals yet, but I've got HBO for like a limited time right now, so I might have to check that out just to get a sense of what they've got planned. Well, I do already have kind of a sense of that. I mean, on the McBride side, because of This Is the End. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited about this. The best part of this bombshell that we got concerning Halloween is we have a release date set for October 19, 2018. Just in time for the 40th anniversary of the original film. How cool is that? It's a good time to be alive. All right, now it's back to the home video news, and we're going to start off with Vinegar Syndrome. Their March lineup has been finalized, and it's a little shorter than usual, and it's pretty heavy on the dirty stuff. The big release coming out in March is going to be Kevin Tenney's Witch Trap, starring Linnea Quigley. So we get some more Linnea Quigley via Vinegar Syndrome. The other titles are, we're getting a Blu-ray DVD combo pack of the 1975 film China Girl, not to be confused with the late 80s movie called China Girl. And the other two are going to be DVD onlys. They are the Peekarama double features. One contains Flame Desires and Love Champions. And the other Peekarama has Sherlock Holmes and Reunion. And this package is set.
Sorry, I just got the play of the words on the title.
Yeah, it took me a second too because I thought I read that wrong because I kind of usually do. But yeah, the release date for the package is March 28th. You could get your bundle. You can pre-order your bundle right now and get 40% off if you order it before March 1st, that is. After that, it's going to be 35% off until March 13th. And then after that, it's going to be 30% off until the release date. So the sooner you order, the more money you can save. And considering it's a light pack in March, it's not going to be too hard on your wallet. So moving right along, we got some Severn news. First up, Severn have announced that they're going to be releasing Bruno Mattei's Guardian Hell, a.k.a. The Other Hell. It's a film from 1981. There's no release date on it yet, but the one thing we can tell you is that it will be a new master. And speaking of Severn, we got some late breaking news to share with you. Severn has a release date for their Blu-ray and DVD of 1977's Kathy's Curse. And this is one that a lot of people are anticipating. And judging by, you know, the stills that I've seen, I really want to see this one. Plus, I got a soft spot for Canadian horror films. I have ever since I was a kid. So this is definitely one that's on my radar. Next up, Blue Underground. There are two previously released movies that Blue Underground put on DVD. They're both directed by Jess Franco, starring Christopher Lee, and those two movies are The Blood of Fu Manchu and The Castle of Fu Manchu. Those movies are going to be put together in a Blu-ray double feature. So that'll be coming out sometime in 2017. Now, this past February 4th was a birthday for George A. Romero, so Arrow took that time to announce that they are going to be releasing 4K restoration Blu-rays of Season of the Witch and The Crazies at some point in 2017. And they will, yes, be available for both U.S. and U.K. collectors. And speaking of Romero, Scorpion Releasing announced that they are going to be working on a Blu-ray of the movie Two Evil Eyes, which is the film he co-directed with Dario Argento. It's two separate stories, so I'm not sure. Would you call that an anthology?
Yes, kind of, sort of, I guess. It had an out-of-print Blu-ray, right? Didn't they already have an out-of-print Blu-ray, so they're re-releasing it? Or is this a different company?
Oh, it's a different company. Blue Underground, I believe, had Two Evil Eyes on,
they did the...
on DVD.
Okay.
Blu-ray, I'm not too sure about. You may be right about that, but I know...
I own the Blu-ray.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then,
but I snagged it before it was going out of print, so it sounds like someone else snagged up the rights.
It did.
Re-release.
That was Scorpion. All right, speaking of Argento, Scorpion Releasing are also working on a Blu-ray for his 2004 film, The Card Player. So that's what we got from Scorpion. And segueing from Scorpion Releasing to Code Red.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big list of titles that Code Red have announced that they are working on. And by Code Red, I mean the Banana Man. First up is The Dark. That's going to be a 2K restoration of the 35mm negative of the original cut. Plus, they're also working on Warlock Moon, which is also going to have a commentary. Then they're going to be putting out Simon, King of the Witches, followed by Street Law, starring Franco Nero, and directed by Enzo Castellari, who did that Jaws ripoff Great White. 1982's The Concrete Jungle, starring Jill St. John. Blackout from 1978. This is going to have a commentary with actress Belinda Montgomery, moderated by Damon Packard. And they're going to be releasing a Paul Naschy movie entitled The Mummy's Revenge. So that's your Code Red update. And now we get to a super long list of updates from Shout Factory. And we're going to start with Shout Select. This is a movie I'm excited for. On May 2nd, Shout Select are going to be releasing a collector's edition Blu-ray of Streets of Fire.
Yes.
I am so soaked for this one because this movie is a childhood favorite. This is a family favorite. The soundtrack is one we can never get tired of. The news that we have right now for this one, it's going to be a 2K scan of the inner positive, and it's going to contain a second disc of extras. So Streets of Fire, May 2nd. And also, that artwork, beautiful. Next up from Shout Select, we've got two legendary Bruce Lee movies, Return of the Dragon and Game of Death, are coming out on May 16th. Both of them are going to be collector's editions, and the one for Game of Death is going to be two disc. Coming out really soon, March 14th, I should say, is going to be Red Dawn, the original Red Dawn. This is also going to be a collector's edition. There's a couple of extras on it, like a 70-minute featurette. So that's going to be one I know a lot of people are looking forward to, especially if you're a fan. Or if you just like to see commies get blown up. And finally, from Shout Select, A Fantastic Fear of Everything, starring Simon Pegg. This one's coming out in May, and it's going to be available on Blu-ray and DVD. And now we're moving on to Scream Factory. They've got a long list of extras for both RoboCop 2 and RoboCop 3. Both of those are going to be collector's editions, and those are coming out on March 21st. And for a full those extras, maybe I'll get something typed up for that so you can see exactly what's going to be on it, because it's a lot.
It actually is, it's so many extras that actually, because I was kind of poo-pooing this release, and there's enough there, and I think Frank Deckard is even involved, right?
Yeah.
On the RoboCop 2.
For 3.
Yeah, so even with his involvement, I think there's a commentary with him. I think. Anyway, there's enough on there with people involved with these that I almost need to grab these now because I want to hear, especially 3, I want to hear like how that thing, because that thing just bombed, and the director was very vocal about everything, and so it'll be great to hear it coming directly from him. You know, so I've changed my tune. I am actually looking forward to these now.
Cool. Well, I was looking
just because of the amount of extras. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really long list, so I'll get that up for you as soon as I can.
Cool.
Wow. I'm looking at these dates, and all I see is May, and there is a ton of good stuff coming up in May. I mean, I already mentioned Streets of Fire before from Shout Select, but Scream Factory are going to be releasing Jackson Stewart's Beyond the Gates. This is an IFC Midnight release. They're also releasing the movie Virus on May 2nd. That's the Jamie Lee Curtis movie. And another Women in Cages, you know, Women in Prison movie, I should say. It's called The Naked Cage. That one is coming out on May 2nd. We have a release date for Psycho 98, May 9th. That is if you want to buy it. But even better on May 9th is going to be Serial Mom, John Waters' Serial Mom. And this has got some pretty cool extras on it, too. And I'll share those on the site when I can. Here are two movies that I know a lot of people have been asking for, and that's Willard and Ben from 72 and 73, respectively. Those are coming out on May 16th. And if I remember correctly, when they announced these all the way back at Comic-Con, it was going to be a double feature Blu-ray. It looks like they're going to be...
That was my impression, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to be separate releases, Blu-ray and DVD combos. So that's going to be really exciting. And there's also a bunch of titles that...
Well, more money.
Yeah, there you go. And there's a bunch of titles coming out from Scream Factory 2 that little light on the details, but let me just go through these. They listed five obscure titles that they're going to be putting out, much like they did with Deathstalker and a couple other ones. I think Up from the Depths was another one. But they're going to be putting out The Man from Planet X, The Four Skulls of Jonathan Drake, The Bat People, Vicious Lips, and Alienator. So a bunch of...
Alienator is a ton of fun.
Oh, really? You seen
Not
it?
Not sure if it's worth $25.
Oh, dear.
I have it on some like four movie set that I got for $7 that they had released that Scream Factory or Shout Factory had released.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it's a fun B movie. I don't know if you really, really need it in high def. Or need to spend $25 on a bare bones. That's my only problem with these are they're just striking some HD masters, you know?
Right.
Or releasing these HD masters. And I'm sure they look good, but, you know, these movies, man, they're goofball fun. So it's you know, it's whatever you want to do. It's however you want to spend it, you know. If you feel like it's worth it, go for it. But Alienator out of that bunch is the one that I've seen, and it's goofy as shit, that's for sure.
Hey, is this on the same one that Exterminator 2 is on? The same...
like that. It's like they're... it's on the same one, I think, that has The Arena.
Oh, okay.
It's a bunch of sci-fi stuff.
Yeah, I just might...
I can't remember. The Arena, though, or is it just Arena? It's some 80s sci-fi flick. If that ever comes out on Blu-ray, I'm buying it. Even though I own,
I think before I make, I think before I make a decision if I want to spend that kind of money on just something like that, I think I might pick up that four movie collection that they put.
You can find it for cheap, and they're all super fun, you know. So then they look fine. That's the thing. Like they're, you know, I pass on the Deathstalker ones because I already own them on DVD, and they look good enough for me for those movies.
That's another one I want
to
get.
Spend $25. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another set I want to get.
DVD.
The Deathstalker 2 and the Barbarian Brothers. Yeah. I haven't seen that one since I was a kid. I can't wait to revisit that. All right, moving on with more Scream Factory stuff. They're going to be putting out this movie from 1980 called Windows. It's a thriller, NYC thriller, directed by cinematographer Gordon Willis, the legendary Gordon Willis. Starring Talia Shire, music by Ennio Morricone. And there's no release date for that yet, but it's supposed to be coming out sometime this summer. They're also putting out a Blu-ray of Island of Terror. This is starring Peter Cushing from 1966, directed by Terrence Fisher. And finally, I'm actually kind of not surprised by this, but Scream Factory are putting out a collector's edition of the original Species. So if you bought all the other Species movies from Scream Factory, guess what? You get to complete the whole set.
Because that's already out on Blu-ray too, though.
Yeah, but it's a bare bones.
But I'm sure they're going to add some good stuff.
Oh, for sure. I can't wait to see who they get to interview for this one.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of an impressive cast, yeah. I remember. Because I revisited this one last year and I saw you know, Ben Kingsley's in it and Marge Helgenberger from CSI. And I'm like, wow, star studded. But here's the thing. I just want to bring this up really quick. And if they're going to do this for Species, you know, put it and say, oh, just throw in the original one then. You think they're going to do the same thing to RoboCop? Because I think that might be a strong possibility.
Oh, RoboCop, who knows, man? That's gotten so many releases by so many different companies. It's all about money at this point, I'm sure. But I've bought RoboCop so many times, I think I'm good. But they might, I mean, but the thing is, like, they did that, those releases for Scanners, and Criterion got Scanners, you know, so, for the original, so, who knows, I don't know. And then they released Phantasm 2, but never got to release the entire set, you know, so who knows, I'm sure it's something that they thought about, but I'm not really worried about it. RoboCop Blue is pretty great, and it's very stacked, so.
That is all the news that I have for you, Sean.
Yeah, Josh, thanks for all those announcements, man. Yeah, a lot of stuff. So we'll talk to you again next week, yeah?
Yep, we'll see you guys next time, and I'll have some more news for you then.
Awesome.
Save your money. That's all I have to say.
All right, so technical snafus have hopefully been patched. BJ's back.
Oh, hi. I hope you missed me, because I missed you.
Yeah!
All right, here we go. So, first flick we're going to be talking about today, Kino Lorber just released this on Blu-ray. This is 1983's Striker. The last war started an error.
Oh, my God.
Donald Trump. Whose error? Nobody knows. It was Donald Trump. Nor does it matter now. It was Donald Trump. Nothing matters now other than survival. Steve Bannon. No, is that it? No, I just made that up.
Can you write every Filipino ripoff movie?
Yes.
Like, I just would like that to happen now.
This is tomorrow, the day after the end. A world once destroyed, now reborn. Without rules. Without justice. Without water. Only the strongest survive. This is a land he calls home. They call him Striker.
This was released through Roger Corman's New World Pictures. Directed, of course, by Sirio H. Santiago, who I've talked about quite a bit earlier in the podcast about his other post-nuke things. Four of them released by Code Red. And like I said, this is by Kino Lorber.
Hey, don't forget a bunch of stuff released by Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah. Oh, what were those flicks? I had them, and I don't – they're not in front of me.
Well, I mean, they released the Mothers. They've released –
Yeah. The DVDs, yeah. He has done, like, any exploitation or ripoff, pretty much he's covered pretty much every genre.
Death Force, that was the other one.
Yeah. So you can find, yeah, there's a couple DVDs of his movies through Vinegar Syndrome. I mean, if you look him up on IMDb, his list of films is ridiculous. And they're all pretty much, you know, just trashy exploitation.
All you have to say is Caged Heat 2. Mm. Like, not even Caged Heat 1, Caged Heat 2.
Nice.
In the original, since we talked about Expendables 3, he's the original director of the Expendables.
Oh, man.
That is crazy.
So, we've talked about these post-apocalyptic flicks in the past. This one, definitely very much a response to Mad Max. You got these,
God,
everyone's
was.
Dusty, you got all these cars put together, you have some very good use of shoulder pads, in the film, and, Blu-ray quality-wise, like, the Code Red movies looked better. I don't know if it was Elements or what the elements they got. This one looked, you know, shoddy compared to the Code Red ones. I was surprised.
Well, I mean, it's Kino.
Kino just kind of does the HD masters, I think.
Yeah, maybe Bill did something extra with his.
They look I know that Code Reds look surprisingly good.
Yeah. So.
But Brad, can you set us up with the plot? Because my plot would be a guy with a Jufro wanders through the apocalypse, Jufro intact. Followed by some badass women with some shoulder pads and bows and arrows.
I mean, it's a ripoff of fucking Mad Max. I mean, it's literally who controls the water is the one who controls the world. Yeah. They even say those lines.
I think they say those lines in a handful of these.
Yeah, no, I know, but it's just, I mean, that's exactly what it is. And it's, these women know where the water supply is, and they have plenty of water. And like a couple of them want to share it, and they realize that what that would happen is like a great, they have like a spring that they go into, and Stryker hits up with the ladies. And plus, it's like a little bit of female empowerment. We didn't actually have a lot of those, especially with these Italian knockoffs. I mean. Usually women get treated like shit in Italian movies. So it was kind of refreshing to see, kind of a somewhat women empowerment, having a group of women together, which of course, Mad Max Fury Road did, But I mean,
all I could think about watching it was like, there's no way in hell that they weren't looking at some of the older, kind of, ripoffs of the Mad Max movies and being like, hey, this is actually a really good idea and really prevalent in today's cinema and would be really impactful, and we should just do that.
and they did for years. It's crazy. I think it's just because it was so cheap. You just go to some thrift stores, you buy a bunch of shit, you go to a junkyard, throw some vehicles together, and then you got
I do love that in the apocalypse. I need to rephrase. It's really early. I meant more so with like Fury Road and using of women is similar to Stryker.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I do find it interesting that in all of these post-apocalyptic movies that the shoulder pads are such a prominent feature. You'd think that they would find something else to want to protect, but for whatever reason, everyone's like, "Nah, dude, shoulders."
This movie does have one of the best shoulder pad disrobing / love scenes in a cave full of water that I've ever seen in my life.
Hey, I just like if I'm going to be battling in the apocalypse, I want my shoulders covered. And then pretty much just have a loincloth on because that's what everybody has. Apparently, your shoulders are the key to survival.
Then you also get like the dwarf people who are like,
oh my god,
wearing like little Jedi robes. I don't know what else to consider it, but they all come out like you can't really even see them because they're just wearing Jedi robes. You're like, okay.
And they weren't told to like don't create a language. They didn't create a language. They just talk gibberish. Ooga booga doo da booga ba.
Yeah,
like that's all.
I think they just like followed around like babies with like microphones and then just made a dialogue out of babies babbling.
Yeah, those guys have appeared in a handful of these movies by this director. He must have had a crew to go to for these.
No, this guy is like the John Carpenter of fucking Filipino films. Like he used everybody was the same. And he made a lot of blaxploitation films too. But this is what I'm saying, like this is one director that actually took filmmaking and actually started making like he had Women in Chains movies. He had, the males running the show, but then he also had this like huge slew of, women kicking ass. And so like he was just all over the board, he had that film Silk and Silk 2.
Yeah.
The Mothers is of course, female, empowerment type shit. I mean, he has those women in. Yeah, and what is
TNT Jackson?
TNT Jackson. Wasn't Firecracker Fred Williamson in that movie?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I do think that
probably a lot of these, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think he was in a movie called Firecracker, but
no, I don't think he's in that one.
Well, I do think that like these Women in Chains movies kind of get bad raps as being like exploitative to women. But in most of these situations, like, yeah, they're like Women in Chains, Women in Cages, whatever you want to consider it movie, but they're all still like really badass characters that are just dealing with like a kind of a shitty situation.
And they get
like they're usually very like sexually positive. All of the women are making a lot of their own decisions. And if they're not making their own decisions, it's in like a very tactful, like, I'm letting this happen because I'm going to make this decision later on. And this is something I have to get through.
Right.
And I think that, you know, there's still a lot of like power in like female equality in that. It's like the tactful submissive that they use in these movies.
Yeah. Yeah. And they use it for a type of revenge later on. Like it's all set up, you know, but,
That's exactly it.
He does this in his other post-apocalyptic flick, Wheels of Fire, where there's very much kind of a Women in Chains type moment with a character, and you know, any other director would, or I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what the culture was like really back then, but I know a lot of women were being exploited. It's almost borderline exploitive. Am I saying that right? In Wheels of Fire with that character, because she's confined and she has her shirt ripped off, but she does get her moment, you know, later on, and it's never like sexy. It's never like, oh yeah,
there's a rapey scene in Stryker.
Yeah, but it's done as a setup to show, you know, she gets her
right.
Hers,
you know, it's
like
those
she
things.
Gets to deal out the punishment in the end for these characters, but. But this, speaking of the villain, like, this one has there's the main villain who's kind of, you know, whatever, he's a standard villain type, but he has that sidekick, the big guy with the big gut and the weird S&M type outfit.
You mean sexy outfit.
Follows him around. Like, poor guy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just kind of felt bad for the actor.
Man. You want to start a group?
Because he obviously wasn't cast because he's a big, strong guy. He was cast for that gut. I mean, let's be honest.
I remember my first Santiago film. I remember the first time I saw a Santiago film. He had a movie, and it was just based off cover art. That's the reason why I rented it. But it was in the 90s. It was his movie... Raiders of the Sun is like this dude, like this fucking goggles on, and he's got like this fucking huge gun, and it's like, I guess shooting flames or some shit. And he's like screaming, and like, I was like, what the fuck is it? And it's nothing like the movie, of course. You know, when you watch it, but like, it was like on the shelf, like a Blockbuster and stuff when I was little. Like I saw it everywhere. And then finally I got, you know, I rented it. And that's when I, you know, very first saw my very first Santiago film.
Nice. I've been wanting to see that. The other poster, he's like, this guy's like falling down and he has like a chain with a big spiked ball on it.
Oh, I just know the VHS cover art. But yeah, I mean, I didn't know who Santiago was at the time because I rented it when I was little. It was just that image, you know, was got me to rent it. I think I even rented Solo, Mario Van Peebles Solo that night.
That's a hell of a big on action.
Yeah, I mean, what happened to Solo? Like, Mario Van Peebles is great. I mean, everybody knows him, but he had this movie called Solo where he's a fucking crazy soldier, and it was really good. But anyways.
I don't know.
Those 90s direct action or direct to video action movies are just like a dime a dozen. And I mean, just they had like a minute of fame just based off cover art. People enjoyed them, but we need a resurgence because we had a horror film resurgence for sure. But we need an action movie resurgence from the 90s. Because I know the 90s get shit on so much between horror and action, but man, there's a lot of sleazy like dramas. Back in their day, like a lot of sexy dramas and stuff like that, like
oh
erotic
cinema. I miss the erotic dramas.
Yeah, those don't happen anymore, do they?
No, they don't. And it's just no it's color so of night. Weird. Yeah, I mean, even that stuff, you know, the more popular, you know, theater stuff, it's just that stuff doesn't exist anymore.
All we get is like this guy, this bullshit 50 Shades of Gray. And they don't even know how to make
so
that.
It's so boring.
Like,
it's so boring.
Did you ever see, BJ, you ever see After Dark, My Sweet?
No, but it sounds like it's right up my alley just based on the title.
Yeah, Jason Patrick's in it, and Rachel Ward. And it's very, like, steamy and sleazy and sexy. And it was Two Moon Junction or shit like that, where it was just, like, you know, really, like, there was sex in movies, you know, and, like, actual mm-hmm. sex scenes. It's not like the stupid shit that happens now. Or we just see titties and
that's what I'm desperately, desperately missing is I hate that. And it's always titties on top too. Like, what world do you live in where every single sex scene is a woman on top? Get
my
the
world.
Fuck out of here. Shut up.
My world.
My wife wants on top.
So, well, that's fine. But like every single, like I wrote a piece about this not long ago in horror movies about how like that's always how they die is like it's always a girl on top and then somebody gets stabbed behind. And it's like, come the fuck on. Like with the, like there are a few exceptions like Hatchet 2 when like they're doing it from behind and I'm like, yeah, something different. Oh my God. No, I was going to say like I'm not very well versed in Santiago's filmography, but I'm trying to kind of catch up on everything because I was on the tail end of the VHS stores. Like, you know, I've talked about like my mom and pop store, but you know, because it was a mom and pop store that was kind of failing, they had already started to purge a lot of their stuff that they didn't think was going to sell or people weren't going to get. And that unfortunately meant like a lot of Roger Corman stuff that wasn't like already a household name, a lot of foreign language or foreign directed stuff kind of went away. And it would just like made room. So that way they could make room for like the new stuff that was coming out.
Yeah.
So I kind of have a blind spot with a lot of these movies. And that's why I love that everyone's kind of restoring everything because I love them. Oh dear God, do I love them? I have like such an affinity for this.
I love.
Why isn't there a distribution? A distribution or resurrection company that exclusively does that? Like, I will give you all my money.
Let's start it up. Let's do it, Brad.
Dude, fucking, I'm gonna get Zalman King to do like re-release the Red Shoe Diary movies. Fucking Two Moon Junction, fucking Wild Orchid, Body Chemistry, you know, all that shit. I mean, all that shit, like, I would try to sneak those movies in to watch them because that was porno to me, you know, or, God, I just lost his name.
The closest I ever got was a love scene of Top Gun.
Ken Russell made this movie called Whore. That's really fucking crazy and really good.
I remember seeing ads, like theatrical ads for horror back when I was a kid on TV and my parents freaking out.
Yeah, there was a lot of freak out about
it. Oh, that's right. I always forget you were like a little repressed religious kid.
But I mean, like, I remember like walking in, you know, the video store in the drama section and then seeing the cover of Horror and I'm like, what?
Oh yeah!
Like, what is this?
The drama
Teresa
section.
Russell?
Yeah.
Boner.
The drama section during that time was like the place that I would go over there because I knew I can find those VHS covers, and they'd be in drama, like the erotic drama, but they were still mixed in with everything, and I always knew that for some reason the dramas had all like the sex in it, depending on the movie, but those were the ones that I would always end up kind of browsing because my parents would never suspect anything. Oh, Sean's over in the dramas. Oh, he must be looking for like a really good Civil War era war movie or something, you know?
No, you're looking for titties, bro.
Oh, hell yeah. and at the horror, if I was in the horror section, a demon probably would jump out from the VHS tape and grab me and suck me in and, you know, possess me.
I'm just saying, man, there's so many, Jade? Can we talk about Jade for a second?
How do we go from post-apocalyptic Sergio Santiago movies to 80s and 90s erotic thrillers.
Yeah, I was going to say, if we're going to be talking about some titties, let's talk about some titties in Stryker. Let's talk about some titties in this gravel pit that is pretending to be a desert. Titties.
Yeah.
All right. I'm done.
Like I said, there is the sex scene where erotically shoulder pads are taken off by that one.
That's the only way to take off shoulder pads is erotically.
One of Stryker's buddies, he's like super ripped too. One of Stryker's buddies. But what's the deal with Stryker? Stryker's like the Mad Max type character, right? I mean, who plays him? He's first wearing this really ridiculous, like, cowboy hat, for a while, and then he takes it off and his hair is still perfect. And there's this scene where he has that machine gun that people have done gifs of this, like, where he's shooting his machine gun and his hair is like wobbling. You know, have you guys seen that?
No.
A GIF or whatever the hell you call it now. I don't know.
I was saying
people make a GIF of him shooting his machine gun and his hair is like vibrating with the machine gun and it's just perfectly round and beautiful and like the dust is like poofing off, you know, his hair. It's fantastic.
I type in Stryker GIF and all I get is Mortal Kombat GIFs.
Yeah, that's exactly what I just did. I was like, this doesn't work.
Well, the actor is Steve Sandor, and he's been in movies. He was in The Ninth Configuration. Huh. He did some voice acting in Fire and Ice. He was in Bonnie's Kids.
Oh, I found it. Yeah, I like Bonnie's Kids.
The actor, Steve Sandor, who plays Stryker.
What did you say after Bonnie's Kids?
Oh, he's in Bonnie's Kids. I knew you would know what Bonnie's Kids was.
Yeah, I have that. It's a Gorgon video.
Yep, it's on my to watch pile. I need to get to that.
Oh, I did find the GIF. That is glorious.
It is glorious.
Yeah, and all the little like Ewok type little guys are behind him.
Filipino Jawas are behind him.
I think one even has a crossbow. Look, oh, they all have crossbows. Oh, my God.
Yeah, man. They don't fuck around.
I don't remember that scene in the movie.
I think it's near the end. You know, all these movies end with some final battle, you know?
Yeah, because gives them water in the first, like, 5 minutes with, like, this throwaway thing, and then they come to the rescue. Like, you gave us water earlier. We're here to save the day.
But what they said was, Ooga bagadugu, bagadugu piggy!
Yeah, seriously.
So it looks like Steve Sandor did a lot of TV after this. He didn't really do much past the 90s. He's still alive. I checked this out before I talked about him. Remember at the beginning of the when we first started this podcast, I would always bring someone up and they would end up being dead. Always got depressing.
Yes. I don't
really know this dude at all. Like I can't. Yeah. I mean, I know Bonnie's Kids, but I don't know who the hell he was.
I think this was his like big starring role, and he just kind of got sucked in the 80s TV after that. But he's good. I mean, you know, he does a good job. Like everyone's, everyone's trying hard.
He's probably super happy that we're talking about him.
Oh yeah, let's look him up. Steve Sandor, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the show to talk about Stryker.
Are you on Twitter? We want to send you this.
Just keep sending him the GIF.
Yeah. Fantastic. So I think, it's out right now on Kino Lorber Blu-ray. The Blu-ray looks okay. I mean, it looks like they're limited to their elements. Sergio H.
I finally got rid of my VHS tape.
Sergio H. Santiago's filmography is really fun to look through if you're looking into more of the knockoff type films. I've talked about Silk before. Silk is a decent little cop flick. Which, like, surprisingly, like, with the actress, the cover makes it look like it's going to be this sleazy thing. Like, it's actually not. Like, she's a badass cop in it, and she doesn't really, she doesn't really use her body that way that you'd think by looking at that cover. Because the cover's her with a gun in her bra, but it's like she's, like, just a badass cop that kicks ass. That's a fun one. The ones that Vinegar Syndrome has released Death Force, Vampire Hookers, The Mothers, and what are other ones that are available? I've mentioned Wheels of Fire, Equalizer 2000.
Oh yeah, a lot of his movies are available because Corman released Sisterhood. The Vampire, so
yeah, and then Dune Warriors I've talked about. So Brad mentioned Raiders of the Sun. So there's a lot of these that are easy to be found. They're every one of them is a like you can find if you like these types of flicks, you're gonna have fun. Discovering these and watching them. I think we've talked about Killzone before. I think, Brad, you have, haven't you?
I think David Carradine's in that one, I think, right?
Oh, probably. Yeah.
Yep. He is.
So
yeah.
Fun,
I think I have that on VHS.
Fun filmography to look through. Caged Heat 2 is the one that we mentioned. Caged Fury is another one of his films that can be found. The posters are always awesome.
Better than the movie.
Cage Fury poster is badass. So I bet you a handful of these flicks would be found in that Maidens, or was it Machete,
Maidens Unleashed?
You'll probably find a bunch of those movies talked about in that documentary. But anyway, good fun to be had with this. Is there any special features on that Blu-ray?
It's Kino Lorber. I don't think so.
Just audio commentary. Jim Wynorski has the audio commentary. Dude, that would be worth listening to.
Why would he do the audio commentary?
I don't know, man, but I dig it.
Maybe it's his favorite movie ever made.
Maybe.
Could be.
Kino is getting...
I think Jim Wynorski's like the biggest Striker fan in the world.
Could be.
They don't bother to get the actor that's still alive that's not doing anything.
I know.
What should we do for this Blu-ray? I'll get the director of Chopping Mall. Yeah. I already likes the movie.
The funny thing is it has trailers for Wheels of Fire, Dune Warriors, Equalizer 2000, and The Sisterhood. But you can't buy those through Kino. But it's funny that they have those trailers on there. So watch those trailers. Kino is getting pretty good about doing some special features on there. Like I just got their 1 Million Years BC Blu-ray, and I wasn't really expecting much. And that thing's packed. So they're starting to... pack some of their ones.
Yeah, they're starting to, why? Because I think they know the market.
Yeah,
and they're realizing that, you know, I mean, this is also a company that releases, you know, like 20 movies a month on Blu-ray. I mean, they're just going through MGM vaults and, you know, releasing as much as they can. Doesn't matter if it's shitty. You know, that was like kind of a common misconception of, you know, last year, a couple years ago, is that, oh, it's out on Blu-ray. That means it's a classic. Nope, they're just releasing everything now.
Yeah, you got to be selective, man. I almost got sucked into that.
A lot of shitty movies are being out on Blu-ray. Doesn't mean it's good.
I almost got sucked into that, and I was buying too many, and then half of them are like, God, half these movies suck. What am I doing? So I've be selective.
Yeah, no.
Don't.
Yeah, same thing with all the films, man. You get sucked down a rabbit hole.
I've seen some collectors be like, they have a spy number. I need to buy them all. It's like, no, you don't. You don't. You don't.
No, it's just that a lot of people disregard it as classic.
Every single spy number from a company. You don't have to. You don't have to do it. You don't.
Because people are crazy. I don't know if we've established that enough on this.
Oh, it has a slipcover. I gotta buy it. Oh my god.
Well, I will say,
is the movie good? I don't know, but it's a slipcover and a pin.
Bought a ton of VHS tapes because they were still factory sealed, and then we looked up and like some of them, yeah, are like we have a factory sealed copy of Dr. Caligari. That's just worth a bajillion dollars. But then there's like other ones where I'm like, this is worth 12 cents with or without the paper. Like that was not the best purchase. Oh well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, some tapes are just crazy, crazy worth so much money.
Ridiculous.
Oh. I mean, I fucking sold a Wizard zombie tape for $200 last year.
Jesus.
Zombie. That's
you people
been
be crazy.
Like 100 times.
You people spend that money for VHSs? You'd be crazy.
Like, it matters. Like, that's the thing is, like, people just don't, they were like, oh, you know, this one movie that's been released 100 times, this isn't worth nothing. No, it depends on the label it's on because there might only have been like 1,000 of those pressed. So, you have to really, really get into.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm down that rabbit hole.
I
know
being,
too much about tapes.
Yeah, I need somebody to come over and like look at what we have because some of the stuff, like we have, you know, we have a bunch of copies of The Visitor, but we have like three different cover arts from like three different things, and they're all factory sealed. And I'm like, I have no idea what anything is.
It might be cool. I'm being facetious when I make fun of collectors. I am one. I've had to actually break like a lot of OCD habits just to survive, especially being a father of three. So I get it. I get the collector mindset. I'm not trying to be a dick. I've had to break a lot of hardcore habits, so I get it. I used to, like, me not caring about slipcovers is like, that's a recent development within the past couple years. So, just because I, you know, figured out that people would pay money for certain slipcovers. So I'd be like, shit,
yeah,
I'll sell a piece of cardboard and get $20 and buy myself another movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, gotta, I mean, cardboard or movie people.
About shit.
But it's all good. All right, let's move on into our segments here. Let's jump into Stream Screams.
Nate, wake up!
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
Don't fucking scream at me!
Scream, I'll break your neck. Don't scream, miss. Don't scream.
Stream.
Dave, we are talking. I was surprised when you put this on our list, Brad, because this is kind of more of a well-known film. But it's 1985's Silver Bullet.
It happened every time the moon was full. Nobody knew who or what was responsible. They only knew it had to be stopped. Stephen King's Silver Bullet.
Starts Friday at a theater near you.
It's not well known, though. That's the thing, man. It's one of those movies that I've noticed through a lot of conversations with people and just mentioning it. And, you know, that's the thing is I've said this on the show a couple times. Like, you would think that something so popular. Like, I told you, I was at Fantastic Fest last year. I was in the theater with like 250 people. Fantastic Fest, a horror genre or a genre festival that very specializes in horror films in Austin, Texas, a very known movie fucking capital of the world.
You're saying a lot of people there probably know what they're talking about with flicks.
Well, no.
Should.
Well, I mean that, and yeah, I agree, but when the fucking they introduced Phantasm and they said, raise your hand if you've never seen Phantasm, 80% of the theater raises their hands. I'm like, wait a second. Phantasm, like, what the fuck? You know, just because
I also
we
think that,
you know, what?
I was going to say, I think like with something like Silver Bullet, though, because there are so many Stephen King movies, like, I think a lot of people have blind spots. Like, the amount of people that haven't seen Salem's Lot is ridiculous.
And I'm guilty of that. I have my own.
And yeah. I think it's just like, okay, like, you think, like, okay, there's so many of these. What am I going to watch? Okay, I'm going to watch Carrie. I'm going to watch The Shining. I'm going to watch It, and then I'm going to call it a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Sean, Salem's Lot's a lot more popular than Silver Bullet.
I know. So, hey, I just proved my own. You know? I just disproved my own point.
What I'm saying is, like, you know, that's the one thing is, like, I've learned being a, you know, a fan, and even with this podcast and telling people about movies, like, it's okay to talk about some popular things because you'd be surprised how many people haven't seen it. You'd be surprised at the films I haven't seen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just one of those things. I think Silver Bullet's one of those, like, well-known movies that people know about. Yeah. But honestly, then they ask them if they've seen it, they're like, oh, no, I haven't seen that movie.
I remember when Silver Bullet first came out, my parents went on a date night to go see it. Like, my parents used to be, like, pretty cool back in the mid-80s. I mean, there was a time where for Halloween, they dressed up as a priest and a pregnant nun. Something happened after 85. I don't know what happened. So I remember them going to see Silver Bullet. Like, I was like, what movie are you seeing? Because I was young and into movies. And they were like, well, it's a horror movie. It's Silver Bullet. You can't, you know, you can't watch it because it's rated R. And they were, you know, I asked them about the movie and they told me all about the movie, you know. Directed by Daniel Attias. And, of course, directed or based off the Stephen King novel. This movie, like, starts off, like, as a really good horror flick. It's actually pretty, you know, for that time especially, pretty terrifying. But like right around the 40-minute mark when they're all walking through the forest and it's all foggy, there's a moment where it turns a corner. I mean, Gary Busey's been in it for a while and he's entertaining as a crazy uncle. But there's a moment when like...
Because he is crazy.
This guy has a certain baseball bat and all these people are out looking for the werewolf and he gets dragged into the fog and all of a sudden you see the werewolf arm come out of the fog with a baseball bat and just beat the shit out of the guy with the baseball bat. And like at that moment, it turns a corner and it's like campy from there. Not strict campy, but it changes tone to a really kind of a really fun monster flick. And I was kind of like rewatching.
I don't know. I disagree. I disagree on that. I don't think it turns into anything campy.
It gets. Well, he upgrades his little motorized wheelchair.
Oh, the
it
just turns into a different wheelchair. Film.
It's less scary and turns more into like just kind of a fun werewolf romp, you know? I mean, it's at that moment all the.
I mean, yeah, I guess there is some darker stuff in the beginning, like the girl being pregnant and stuff like that. You know, she finds out she's pregnant. Yeah, I mean, but honestly, like I think it keeps up the momentum, and you know, I think in 1985, if you were in the theater. And she's like trying to find like the eye that is injured
great.
And like it passes, you know, Everett McGill and it's
did I tell you guys
like,
I watched
that,
this?
That would have been an epic moment.
Did I tell you I watched this with my daughter?
Oh, no.
No. Oh, I'm so excited.
To it. Oh, man. And especially at that scene, she was like, okay, she totally got what was going on. And then they passed him and she goes, his eye. You know, she was like completely into it. But I will say that this does have probably the cuddliest looking werewolf that I've seen in a movie. He's just
cute.
So furry. I just want to give him a big hug. But as soon as you see the full reveal of the werewolf, my daughter kind of laughs. She's like, yeah, Dad. She's like, this isn't scary. But, she loved it though.
No. I mean, it is kind of a, like one of the, it, like I watched this with Willow when she was young and I actually debated putting this in the kids, startup kit. It was just, I don't know, like, I think for a little kid, I think this might be a little too much.
It's good for, like, 10 or 11.
Yeah, it's a transitionary film. Yeah. Like, it's perfect for that. Like,
because there's gore, but there's no language, there's no sex or nudity. It's just, there's some werewolf.
But the language at times is even a little juvenile when you think about it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a big fan of are you going to make lemonade in your pants? Like, that is the best way to say, like, don't piss yourself I've ever heard. No, I think that Silver Bullet is, like I said, a transitionary film because it does have Gary Busey being a crazy drunk, which is just Gary Busey. But, you know, you do have something kind of silly with the titular Silver Bullet, which is the fucking, it's a wheelchair. Like, that's kind of ridiculous to think about. Like, if you were like, I'm watching this werewolf movie, it's called Silver Bullet, I'd be like, oh, it's probably about a gun, it's probably about this. It's like, not so souped up in my red wheelchair. Like, that's amazing. And also RIP Corey Haim. He is so good in this.
It's really, really good.
Oh, he's great. I just find this movie to be really fun. I think that it's a really nice balance of kind of creepy, scary werewolf movies, which I love werewolf films, and I don't think we have nearly enough of them. Mm-hmm. But it's a werewolf movie that isn't afraid to, like, have fun with kind of the ridiculousness that is the mythos of a werewolf in general, because it's kind of ridiculous. But they have fun with it, and I think that that makes it more exciting, and that's probably why it's a blind spot on so many people's Stephen King thing, is because when you think of Stephen King, like, the immediate thought you have is like, oh my god, like, he's so scary, like, wrote some of the scariest things, like, this movie terrified me as a child. And we forget the fact that Stephen King has a really wide range of creativity in his storytelling. Like, he does have Stand By Me, he does have, like, things that are not Pennywise. And I think that Silver Bullet is one that really, really showcases, like, I can make something really scary, but I can also make something really fun. And I don't know. I think that's probably why it's a blind spot.
Yeah. Would you guys consider this to be one of Gary Busey's best roles? Because I forgot how fun he was in this movie for some reason.
It's a favorite for me.
Yeah.
Busey.
Because it's because it's nuts. Like, I don't feel like he's lost his mind completely yet, right. And he's like phoning it in. Like, he still really cares. He's fucking insane, but he's still trying to give kind of a true to character performance.
Yeah. When was the start of his decline? Point Break, would you say? Because he gets, you know, I'm going to go get a sandwich. Meatball sandwich. He hasn't really reached that level crazy. He's just crazy, kind of crazy drunk. You know, I'm just crazy
he's
drunk.
He's been, yeah, I mean, he's been.
He's the favorite of mine.
Honestly, I can't even think of the last. I mean, I know he was in Lost Highway. But, I mean, he's great in Surviving the Game. That's, I think it's a super underrated.
Yeah. He film. Started. I think he started losing his way in the early 90s, I feel. I feel he started getting.
No, I think early 90s he was okay. Like, that was the beginning of, like, Point Break, and he's in Predator 2.
After that, you know. After that.
You know, I mean, he was fucking Hider in the House. He plays Mr. Joshua in fucking Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon's like 87.
No, I know, but I'm saying I think mid 90s maybe he had his little bit of a decline.
I used to live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he lived in Broken Arrow, which is like a kind of suburbs outside of Tulsa. And people would see him at like his kids. I think he has kids. They were in high school at the time, and people would see him at like high school football games, like just chopping on a cigar and like shaking hands. You know.
Well,
people said that meeting him was he was just, you know, as crazy as, you know, fun crazy. I think, yeah.
I mean, if we're going to talk about Gary Busey, I think we need to talk about our Lord and Savior, the Ginger Dead Man. Because that is like full tilt insane Gary Busey.
Oh my God, that movie. I found that in like a dollar bin, like used movies at like a Hollywood Video. And I was like buying it. I didn't even think twice.
If you go on, I don't know if it's still there. I hope it's still there. But if you go on IMDb, I don't know if it's like when somebody changed the bio to the movie or if it's just like the main quote on there, but prominently displayed on the Ginger Dead Man page is like, "Ooh, girl, he gonna kill you, bitch, you so dead," or something ridiculous in all caps. And I don't know if that's been changed yet, but I remember seeing that when I was like trying to write a piece for like Christmas movies, and I was, oh shit, Gary Busey.
Oh my God, there's been a bunch of Ginger Dead Man movies.
Yeah, they're up to like,
holy shit.
Like
Evil Bong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's Full Moon, man.
Yeah, like I said, I think that's after Gary Busey has just gone full tilt crazy. Because he's in Piranha 3DD, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in that.
Nice.
Oh, Gary.
Well, Silver Bullet is available on, is streaming in HD. I watched it on Vudu. It's probably streaming on like Amazon Prime or maybe you can rent it through
or
Amazon.
Or Shudder or something. I didn't check because.
But it's streaming in HD. It looks okay. Research. It looks all right. It's pretty, you know, it's not the greatest HD, thing you'll find. But this is one, I mean, I would love to see one of these companies, you know, do this one upright. I don't know who owns it.
But I think this would go well with a, because I don't think enough people would buy it on its own. So I think that, like, this would be a good double feature with one of the other, like, Forgotten King movies. Not necessarily, like, Salem's Lot, but something in kind of that vein. I think that it would, that would be how I would sell it. Like,
yeah.
You probably forgot about both of these movies, so now you can have them both.
How about with Graveyard Shift?
Okay. I could get behind that.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
I somehow, I know what I did. I had the DVD and I did like, voodoo.com has this thing where if you own the DVDs, you can upgrade it to HD for like $1 or $2.
And, you know, who owns this is Paramount, actually, I believe.
Okay. So I went through all my DVDs one day, all my bare bones DVDs, and I upgraded a whole bunch of shit for a couple bucks, and I just sold the DVDs because I was like, looks better than my DVD, and my DVD had zero special features. So, that's what I did. So it's available to buy or rent on there. Anything else about Silver Bullet before we move on?
No, just watch it.
Well worth rediscovering.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Rewatch that shit.
I forgot. I mean, I don't know. It's weird when you rewatch a movie, because I was always kind of like, it's okay. And this time around, maybe it was watching it with my daughter, but it was almost like seeing it with new eyes, because you kind of start thinking about, well, what's my daughter thinking? But man, I had a fucking blast rewatching it this time.
Yeah, and I think I really do think it's that distancing that you have is like, when this came out, I think everyone was like, Stephen King, scariest writer alive, and like this movie. Yeah, it's kind of scary, but it's more fun than it is anything. So yeah. People probably just didn't get it. So letting the time pass and then revisiting it, I think that's some of the smartest things to do with movies like this. Anything that isn't, you know, fully scary, like let some time pass, give it a revisit, and then look at it from another perspective of like, I just want to have fun, and you will, and it'll be a blast. So
except the Langoliers. You could skip that.
It's so long. It's so long. Also, what's the deal with Stephen King loving kids with handicaps? Like, there's nothing against that, but you just mentioned the Langoliers were like, she's blind, and it's like, okay.
Well, we didn't touch on that with Silver Bullet. I think this is a great lead character who, you know, who is bound to a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even a really big deal. Like, there's no like, hey, look at me, look how handicapped I am. You know, it's
he's not Haynes Franklin character. In Texas Chainsaw.
Right. He just handles shit. You know, he gets made fun of.
I'm supposed to go easy on him because he's a cripple.
Right, but him as a character, though, he doesn't let that, you know, get in the way at all. I mean, he souped up his wheelchair. His crazy Gary Busey uncle gives him this freaking motorcycle, basically.
Yeah, doesn't it do like 60 miles legal. An hour?
Yeah, this thing's not street legal, folks. He doesn't even have a seatbelt in that thing. But hey, it has a couple flags. It has those flags. But he doesn't let that limit him at all, and I think that's great how empowered he is as a character, and I thought it was really, really fun to see him just handle his business and make no excuses at all. So
business,
real strong kid character in this, and that's why I was like, I love that I was able to watch it with my kid, because you know I was just surprised. Being a parent, you see movies in a different light, I guess. And I never even, because the last time I saw this movie, I didn't have kids. So, anyway, all right, moving along. Let's jump into VHS. Oh my God.
Nikki.
Well, here we are at last. Right where we ought to be. Video.
Oh my God!
All right, so this week we're talking about a 1990 film starring Jeff Goldblum that I feel like one of you have brought up before. But this movie is called Mr. Frost.
Who is Mr. Frost?
No one has been able to turn up the slightest clue regarding Frost's identity. There's no official trace of him anywhere.
What has he done?
And in 2 years, he hasn't uttered a single word?
Frost is not mentally ill, Dr. Day. He has no place in your hospital.
What does he want with us?
So, in fact, who are you?
I'm the Gaga Man. Boo.
He spoke to you.
I'm not afraid of him.
It used to be simple. Good on one hand, evil on the other. There was a struggle. But then you came along, the scientists, the geniuses.
What do you want from us? What do you want from me?
I must reveal to the world your impotence in the presence of the age-old power of the Wild Side.
This was out on VHS.
Brought
this
up
one...
like me?
Maybe it's brought up by you. I remember, like, when you mentioned this movie, I had known it from somewhere. I don't know if it must have come up in casual conversation at some point. either on the show.
This
or
is one
just
that I've been trying to track down forever because Jeff Goldblum, and
it's a rare tape.
Spoiler alert: I still haven't.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to find. I was like, every time we do these VHS movies, I try to find any legal-ish way of seeing the film. So I always check YouTube first. There's a shit ton of clips on here. So I watched the trailer. I watched a whole bunch of clips. Mm-hmm. So I have a good idea of what it's about. And I really fucking want to see it so bad now. I want to see it so bad because I've seen all this. And then I, trying to find this, anywhere I could. And I couldn't, unfortunately by the time we got around to talking about this, it's hard to find, and someone needs to release this, like, legit.
Too legit.
Because once I start kind of Googling, you start finding really crazy sites and crazy links, then I kind of just be like, I don't really want, you know, porn being automatically downloaded on my computer through some spyware.
Why?
Well, yeah, the kind of porn that you would not want on your hard drive, okay? I always get weird. Once you kind of Google, there's a shadowy part of the internet trying to find films that I just don't even want to try. Even if it's like a long lost film that needs to be rediscovered, I kind of start getting scared. So I didn't go into the seedy parts of the internet to view this. But Brad, you brought this movie up, so please let us know what this is about. And
I've never seen it.
Jeff Goldblum.
I couldn't find it.
And his dark locks of hair. Why?
I couldn't find it.
Shut up.
I didn't look for it.
Shut up.
Mr. Frost is good. and my mother actually is a huge fan of this movie, and that's how I first saw it. When I was younger, wasn't probably too much into it because it's, you know, it's a slower paced horror film. There's a lot of it's a slow burn, a big slow burn. And I remember it being one of those rare tapes. I found one at, you know, a garage sale or somewhere, and I picked it up. And I was actually in New York one time, walking the streets, looking at the peddlers and, you know, the people selling on the stuff on the side of the road. And I was actually writing a script in New York with Josh Johnson, director of Rewind This, and one of the dudes at Intervision, Severin. We were writing a script together. And I mean, we would just go out and get, like, you know, street food and stuff, because that's way better than any restaurant in New York. We found like a pile of VHS tapes, and Mr. Frost was in there, and he got super excited because it is a rare tape to find. So it's kind of hard to find. I mean, he's a big VHS collector, and he didn't even have it. So if you ever find a Mr. Frost tape, you're good. Buy it, because it's hard to find. Now, the one thing about this film, it's shot in really, really low light. So it's even the tape, like, is super, super dark. Huh. And fucking Goldblum's hair looks like a helmet. But it's about a, this is the first like 5 minutes of the film, a police officer who is kind of the lead, police officer in, or a detective really. He's, goes up to, we only know him as Mr. Frost, goes up to Mr. Frost. He's like doing some, you know, fucking gardening or something. And, like he questions Mr. Frost about this missing person, this dead body. And, Mr. Frost just turns around and he says, yeah, he's like, I got, you know, plenty of bodies buried in here. You know, I've been killing people. There's 24 bodies. And the detective's like, what? Like, why would you admit that? And they incarcerate him, put him in a sane asylum immediately. And he doesn't talk after that. After he admits to the crimes that he's committed, he does not speak to anybody. And then he's introduced to this psychologist, doctor at the asylum to, you know, speak with him and, you know, trying to get to the bottom of who this guy is. And he only speaks to her. He doesn't speak to anybody else. He just speaks to her. And he claims that he is Lucifer. And he's here to create chaos. So, I mean, the whole – that's kind of the beginning of the film. The whole kind of synopsis is that he wants her to kill him. That's the end goal of the film. It's really wild. It's really crazy, and it's one of those films that you watch and you're like, man, this is a fucking clever fucking horror film. Like, this is really fucking good. So it's always kind of this movie's always stuck out mainly because my mom was a big fan. That's how I originally saw it, you know. And then years later, you know, years and years later, when I was collecting tapes, I came across it and was like, oh shit, Mr. Frost, my mom really liked this. And I, you know, rewatched it and I really liked it then. And I like it even more now. It's one of those ones that I revisit periodically. My tape is so fucked up in the first like 5 minutes though. It sucks. I watched it quite a few times. Just because it's up my alley. You put anything with fucking aliens, a cult, or Satan, I'm usually 100% on board. That's like my three favorite things. And I love, and you know, fucking Jeff Goldblum. Like, I mean, we didn't get too many movies of Jeff Goldblum where he like, but he was in, you know, horror films, to start, you know. He was in a few horror films actually. Now that I think about it, I mean, obviously he's in The Fly. He's in Mr. Frost. I know that he's in,
Invasion of Body Snatchers.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He's in The Sentinel. He plays the photographer in The Sentinel.
Why do you think like, Mr. Frost is so hard to find? Like, especially given that a lot of
it was French-made, French-produced, released on a label that wasn't it was an American label, but it was very small.
Yeah,
looking at foreign cinemas called like SRS. It looks like International or something.
Yeah, it only has one DVD release and it's a Dutch DVD release. And it's probably just a VHS rip.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he was in what was that other Hideaway where he is really fucking good. He plays a fucking lunatic. But yeah, he was in, you know, these horror films when he was younger. So it was like really cool that he, I mean, and the thing is, what I love about Jeff Goldblum is just the way he speaks, the way he carries himself. I mean, I'm mesmerized by when he takes Laura Dern's hand and he fucking talks about chaos theory and fucking Jurassic Park. Like, I mean, I want to be Laura Dern's hand so bad. But that's kind of like how Mr. Frost is, because it's a very, 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 very talky movie.
Yeah. Well, I can listen to Jeff Goldblum talk anytime.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's amazing because it's just him, you know, and he's very conniving. He's very manipulative. He's just really good in this role.
Does he do kind of the soft, like, stutter, half smile, or, you know?
No. He doesn't do the classic Jeff Goldblum. Oh, okay. He's very because Jeff Goldblum does that, like, that's a Jeff Goldblum thing when he's trying to be kind of. Yeah, I mean, it's like John Cusack does that too, you know?
Right.
John Cusack does the eye wiggle. Have you noticed that? When he gets intense and his eyes freaking, like, wiggle back and forth. Have you guys noticed that?
No, but. I'm actually starting to sound like John Cusack saying this, but he does the pause and then he talks really fast and pauses and then stutters and then repeats himself a couple times.
Right.
It's John Cusack. Jeff Goldblum does the exact same thing. But no, this is played very straight. There's no fucking around. Like everything's premeditated in this film. Everything is planned. Like that's what I'm saying. It's one of those films where it's extremely well written, it's extremely well paced. It doesn't fuck around, it doesn't waste any time at all. It doesn't waste any scenes. Like every fragment of the film has a purpose, and that's why I said it's clever, because a lot of horror films don't do that. Or, you know, this would even probably be more of a thriller. Yeah. And it's just like, I mean, it's a really fucking good episode of like the X-Files or something. That's kind of what it feels like. It's very X-Filey. Like, you know, you're waiting for Mulder, you know, to pop in and Scully and just start investigating the shit.
Yeah, this was this is out in 1990. This is after like Earth Girls Are Easy and after The Fly. So he was kind of a big, getting to be a pretty big star by then. But this was still, I guess, would it be considered early Jeff Goldblum, I guess, right? I mean, BJ, I know a lot of women love Jeff Goldblum, and even now,
he's aged like a fine wine.
What is it?
He's so grossly sexy now that he's like a silver fox. Oh my God. I think the appeal for me personally of Jeff Goldblum is he has this like uncanny ability to be not only just filled with just confident swagger, but also look like weirdly vulnerable, like at the exact same time. Like, I don't understand how it works, but you know, the absolute best way to describe it is him in Jurassic Park, where he's, you know, this really intelligent guy. He's got like the open black shirt and like the tinted sunglasses.
God,
and
he's sex on
a stick. You know, everything about his body just like oozes sex appeal, but at the same time, he's a total fucking dork. Like everything that he says is the nerdiest shit you've ever heard, but you're just like, oh my God, my basement's flooded. Like you're so hot and so nerdy at the same time. And I think he is kind of the epitome of like when girls are like, I like nerdy guys. And it's like, no, you don't like mouth breathers with zits. You like sexy guys with glasses that are smart. Jeff Goldblum is that guy. And like, as he's gotten older, he just has kind of that like silver fox thing going on now, especially. Like, it sounds really bad, but
coming from a very, very straight guy, he plays like, he's a good looking dude right now. Like
he played one of the gay dads of Lea Michele's character on Glee. So I don't know, like that confused the shit out of like my sexuality, because it's Jeff Goldblum like Silver Fox style being a gay man talking about like why they adopted this girl in particular and why they like encouraged her to listen to Barbara Streisand, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so confused right now. I'm so turned on. Like, this is so weird.
Well, what's great about
I think. Go ahead.
No, what's great about him is like, even if you look back all the way back to The Fly, like, even as he's turning into this monster and is just a disgusting creature, like, Gina Davis is still like in love with him, and you still like have feelings as a viewer for this character. Like, in other movie, they'd make him a monster.
See him.
And yeah, it's crazy. Like, even like Jeff Goldblum can come through this hideous makeup, and you still like have this compassion towards his character.
Yeah, he just oozes heart, like, with everything he does. Even when he's, you know, supposed to be like a bad guy or like a smartass, he's just so sincere. And like, you know, you bring up The Fly, especially, like, that's a really interesting movie because of who you're supposed to like empathize with switches in that movie. Mm-hmm. And the second it starts turning into like Gina Davis's movie about dealing with all of this, like, you still can't help but, like, love him.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, he didn't mean for any of this to happen. And, yeah, he's gross, but, like, you know, it's very much beauty in the eye of the beholder kind of thing, because he's still the same person, and he's still, like, just wonderful.
Yeah.
I love Jeff Goldblum. Oh, I love Jeff him Goldblum. So much. He the best.
I mean, let's just talk about I think maybe at the time when I was little, because I was, like 10 when Jurassic Park came out, but watching Jurassic Park over and over and over, I think it's one of the best summer blockbuster movies ever made. But after his leg gets hurt and they post him up, like, and he's resting, but in that one
that
shot where he's like, he's got his shirt open, he's like leaning back, like, this dude's supposed to have like a fucking broken leg and in pain, and he's just looking like, just sexy as fuck, just sitting there in Jurassic Park, like, I don't give a fuck about these dinosaurs right now. just that one shot just cracks me up, man.
Have you seen the gif of, it's him laying in kind of the sexy pose, and then, what's his nuts is, It's they take the scene from when he's listening to
Sam Neill, yeah. He's,
thank you. It is Sam Neill like laying on him, just listening to him breathe. Oh my god, I lose it every time. It's so funny.
So great. I could watch that.
So, moral of the story: we all need to see Mr. Frost, and somebody needs to release that so we can all see it.
And we know some
Jeff
of you distributors
is bae.
Listen to the show, Arrow, Vinegar Syndrome, for sure. We know you guys do. I know Severin sometimes checks out the show. Please, I mean, we'll help try to find the elements. We'll do whatever we can. Drop us a line. Read me at thescreamcast.com.
Yeah, I hope it does, because you know it's a horror film too. You know, Jeff Goldblum gets, like, anytime Jeff Goldblum's in anything, it has people's attention. Males, females.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's Jeff Goldblum. It needs to be preserved.
He's a really well-known and very well-liked actor.
Yeah. And
so as soon as Jeff Goldblum – yeah. And it's one of those films. And then now you have a horror film. Like, the horror community is going to be, you know, really into it. It's a thriller, you know. And Jeff Goldblum is probably – and I've seen a lot of Jeff Goldblum movies, and I'm a big fan. This is by far one of his best roles ever. Like,
he's
so funny.
I want to make a sweater out of his long, dark hair in this film.
Whoa, Sean.
Well, I think that it also would make sense too, because, oh God, what is that movie? Is it Let Us Pray? Where it's the dude
church?
No, shit,
the
it's not
police
that one.
Station
Fuck.
Movie?
Yes, the police station movie.
Yeah.
That one. Like,
what are you bringing that movie
that
up for?
Well, I'm bringing that up because you made the comment about like how it's like, I'm Satan, I'm here to create chaos, like, I want you to kill me kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, Let Us Pray. Yeah.
Has kind of, like, thank you, that is what it's called. Jesus, my brain forgot how to speak English and how to name movies. But I think given, like, how successful that was with people finding it and loving it, I think this would be, like, a really good, like, hey, did you like this movie? If so, you'll love this.
Yeah.
So.
I need to watch Let Us Pray. Yeah. I send somebody to watch
Platt. Is that what it's called, Brad? Or
yeah,
did
Let
I
Us Pray, P-R-A-Y. I like that,
yes.
The main character, Liam Cunningham,
yeah,
the actor,
the,
I like him a lot.
It's the Irish.
Yeah, the dude
from
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, we need to wrap up here. So everyone, flood your favorite label with requests for Mr. Frost.
No, don't do that, because people
a
say
good
Scream Factory.
Oh, shit. Yeah, not Scream Factory.
We just want Arrow to do it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, Arrow, please. We will even pay for it. I mean, you know, we won't pay for the distribution. I mean,
I'll buy it when you put it out.
yeah. You know, Arrow is genius that they, when they give out their press copies that they're BDRs, because I feel like they will people who love film in general and love the films will accept those, but the people that want to just get free shit by being a blogger, like, they won't, because it's not in my slipcase or package. So it's genius. I think it's genius that they do the check discs, Arrow. Because I buy every single release I want, and then we cover it on the show.
Well, they do BDRs, but they also have those generic covers. It's just a white cover. It's a test disc. It's a QC.
Yep.
Disc. That's
I think that Arrow gets coverage from people that legitimately want to talk about the film and love the films and love the company, and they're not just trying to get a freebie. I think it's great.
That's why you don't see a lot of people suck on their dick.
Exactly.
Like some other ones.
All right. That's gonna do it for this week's show. It's time to wrap up. You can check us out over at thescreamcast.com. We are attempting to put together a live episode this week. So stay tuned to our Twitter feed for that, scream_cast. We'll record it live. We'll do a Google Hangout YouTube thing and then release the podcast like the following week. But if you want to participate in the live thing, just, you know, follow us and we'll give you all the details And I hope it works out. It's going to be, I have never done a live thing before. If you have experience with that, hit me up and give me some tips. But we'll be doing that. And please check out our sponsors. Give them some love.
Want to tell them what we're doing? So way people get prepped?
We're going to, hopefully if it all works out with the Google Hangouts thing, we basically want to hear from you about movies that you've discovered, some of your favorite movies that you've discovered by listening to our podcast.
It's our anniversary episode.
Oh, yeah. 3 years.
Uh-huh. There you go. My gosh, this is like you like just telling a synopsis of a movie.
I'm horrible at this. I'm horrible at at plugging sponsors, and I'm horrible at keeping track of anniversaries. Except for my wedding anniversary, I have to keep tabs on. But anything like,
so anyways, we're having an anniversary episode this week. We want our listeners to tune in. Tuning in, you must give us a film that we have talked about on the show that has quickly became a favorite, all-time favorite of yours. Mm-hmm. We'll be discussing our top 10 films of all time, just something to talk about. And you can jump in at any time and hit us up on Twitter or Facebook if you want to join. So that way we can kind of get a list and an idea, maybe even give some times for you, because mm-hmm. we don't want 30 people on a call, of course. So again, just kind of set it up and, you know, be on the show for 5 minutes. But we want to hear, you know, this is your chance to be on the show, because we appreciate our fans and all that shit. So
awesome. All right, and like I said, give our sponsors some love, thescreamcast.com/sponsors. A lot of new Arrow shit is coming out, and grindhousevideo.com is getting stocked up. So get your pre-orders in for all this new stuff that's coming out. All right, and all the other sponsors, you can find them on the website. That's it for this week's show. Talk to you guys next
time.
See
ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
See, I'm horrible at this plug and stuff. I'm like, I don't
know. You're really good. You're good. You're good. Oh, shit.